It's the John Hansen Show.
Oh, Roger Badish, thank you so much. When I said hello to Roger through our little internal speaker system, that's how he greeted me. And I've never had a musical intro because, of course, I'm just filling in here for Matt Bubala this evening. And I wanted to replicate that. Roger, that was really special. Thank you.
Well, you deserve it, especially since you're probably got toothpicks in your eyelids and trying to stay awake.
You know, it's interesting because I never mind doing the Friday overnight. So I work over to WCIU and we're up at like 3 in the morning and we do the morning show there. And so this isn't actually all that unusual. I went to bed kind of at a normal time. I'm doing this like in between. I'm like cutting my sleep in half tonight and just doing a 3-hour radio program.
Gotcha. And you don't have to go into the jam for the weekend. So you got the weekend. That's cool.
I'll recover. I'm going to be doing some rock climbing tomorrow, but later in the afternoon. Noon as a date, Roger. Wow. I'm doing a rock climbing date.
You.
Yes.
A man of the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be indoors. It'll be a Brooklyn boulders on the West Loop. So not real rocks. More like wood climbing is what it'll be.
Those little plastic things that jut out from the plastic wall.
No, we're not going out to the West, the Star Rock or anything like that. We are keeping it easy at Brooklyn Boulders.
That's good.
I got a little dinner planned tomorrow night with my brother coming to town, so it's going to be a nice, easy Saturday. So I can do anything. That's how I always feel. I can always fly through. Roger, how's life? Everything going good with you?
Yeah, you know, usual stuff heading up. This is our busy month at the Badish Enclave.
Mm-hmm.
It's the triumvirate celebration month.
What does that mean?
So, you know, big Valentine's Day coming up on February 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, been married now 42 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I still, you would think after all that time, you know, don't worry about it. I know you love me. It's Valentine's Day. Whoop-de-doo. Whatever.
Right. Some people feel that after like 3 or 4 months.
That's true. Yeah.
But you guys still go for it.
Well, I do. I become the little mushy old husband. And
well, what do you do for? What's so special? What do you do?
Well, nothing special.
Okay.
Well, it's hard because she's changing her diet now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I can go out and get the dark chocolates that I always get and, you know, some nice flowers or something and a card. Always a card. She's a big card person.
Yeah. Something tangible to hold on to.
Yeah, you know. And so we've got that, and that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the 18th, 4 days later, her birthday.
Oh, okay.
So I'm already set for that.
Okay.
I got that.
You're all good to go there.
And then 3 days after that.
The 21st.
Our anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah.
All within a week. So the 14th
In
to the 21st.
7 days, yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I can't get away with, like, just one gift.
You don't mash them all up into one.
Not if I value my life.
Well, that's never fair when people mash holidays and birthdays together.
Yeah,
that's not
people
fair.
People do that. And I tried it once.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Once.
Yes. How many years ago was that?
I can't remember. But I do remember that it lasted not even half a day.
Okay.
Because I went rushing out to make up the difference.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Mm-hmm. And a big month. And then March 1st, you guys have the theater.
The old-time radio show. We're back on track now over at the Chicago Cultural Center. They had a big exhibit that took our space for most of this past year. And so we weren't able to perform there like we usually do. So this is the After SAG Senior Radio Players Group, of which I think I'm the youngest senior. in the group.
Right.
And
you've got a gray beard and everything.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but that's only to figure out what it would have looked like if my hair was still on top.
a barometer for what would have been.
Exactly. Okay. So we're doing two shows. We're doing an episode of The Saint.
Ooh.
And an episode of The Great Gildersleeve.
That's cool. I've never been, and I'm vowing to go this year. March 1st, 6:30. Remember, I saw you about a month or so ago, and you got it engraved in my brain here, Roger.
Yeah, and it's I haven't directed an old-time radio show in many, many years, and I'm directing The Saint, and we have just picked our cast. I'm not going to tell you who is The Saint,
Ooh.
But when you come to see the show, Doors open at 6:30. We start at 7. When you come to see the show, you will see who we have cast as Simon Templar the Saint, and you will be blown away.
If you ever need a sinner, Roger, you know I'm here for you.
Yeah, all right. Definitely.
All right, so chime in anytime, Roger. We got 3 hours to fill. We got a packed show, though, in Jess Rains. How
That's
you doing?
Good
to chat with you. Good to work with you. I think this is the first time we've worked side by side together, right? Am I mistaken?
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah, this will be fun. What's Matt up to? Is he enjoying time with family away from Illinois? I didn't even think to ask.
Well, hopefully he's listening. I believe he's flying out in a couple hours. He's going to be in Florida this weekend.
Oh, very, very good.
At a conference.
Oh, a conference. Sounds very fun. So I'll be filling in for the next 3 hours, but we got a lot of storage. How's your week been, Jess? I know you've been busy. You've been working all your jobs, all this crazy stuff, but you are as perky as ever here on this Saturday morning.
Well, that's because I have coffee, so I guess I can share with Elliot if he's still floating around upstairs.
Exactly. Anyone chiming in, 312-981-7200. Here's what we're going to do this evening. So the first thing we've got coming up is a good friend of mine, good friend of shows that when I fill in, or when Esmeralda and I fill in. Also, you hear him on Dane Neal a lot. Blake Stubbs is going to be joining us. Roger's heard from Blake many times. Great guy. And Blake Stubbs is a movie critic. And we're going to first talk about Groundhog's Day, because this was the 25th anniversary of that. Of course, it was Groundhog's Day yesterday as well. Talk a little bit about that movie. And then on the theme of love and Valentine's Day, talking about the greatest love stories in movie history. Many movies, of course, dedicated to love stories, and the very central theme of most movies, many movies, is love stories. But Blake has some really interesting ones, some ones you'd expect probably, ones you wouldn't expect. So 312-981-7200, you can start getting those texts. And now I always love trying to stump Blake in a way, see if we can find a movie that he's never heard of, or a relationship, a love story that he's never heard of in the movies. He's seen almost every single one of them, but every now and then he loves to leave a WGN interview with a movie to go watch himself. So 312-981-7200, get those love stories in. Roger, one of the stories that you mentioned in the news that I wanted, you know, I don't know if you want to blur the line of journalistic integrity here and offer your opinion, but we can tee this up a little bit. Over the internet, I'm reading all on Facebook and Twitter, everyone heralding this father at the Nassar sentencing, post-sentencing trial, Randall Margraves, the gentleman who lunged for Nassar during this courtroom hearing on Friday, hailing him as a hero for going after Nassar. And I don't pretend to know or understand what must be going through his mind and the torment that his family's been going through. But I think he should be held in contempt of court or something. It seemed like a very dangerous situation, and it's something that he knew was being televised. And it's just something that I don't think has any place in a court of law, and is a really scary situation. And as if we start heralding him as a hero, and it might be justified, and maybe he deserves those 5 minutes that he asked for to be alone with Larry Nassar. You know, that's not for me to decide. But I just hate seeing stuff like that.
Well,
Roger.
I tend to believe, I've seen examples over the years, but I'll bet you that this type of thing happens a lot more often than one might think in our courtrooms around the
country.
Where
a victim or a victim relative might try to incite physical violence?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Where they become so distraught, so angry, so filled with emotion that they lose control.
Yeah.
And they are restrained by the court officers.
Yeah, the bailiffs and such.
And probably have been put in a cell to cool off.
Yeah.
Maybe charged with disorderly conduct, possibly having the charges dropped. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But in this case, the judge let him go.
Yeah. And maybe that's the right decision. I'm not saying it wasn't. But 312-981-7200, I'm really curious. And again, I'm kind of saying this. I'm not a father. I don't know. And maybe that's the first.
Here's the catch. Three of his daughters, his three daughters were assaulted by this guy.
Right.
Not just like one child.
Right. Which is bad enough.
Right. And he was in the court. And if you heard the recording in the news, in the report I had, He says he looked over at this doctor who was shaking his head. Now, if if the guilty party is shaking his head like he can't believe.
Right.
My life is just over. I can't believe. I can understand that.
Yeah.
But if the father was triggered to do what he did based on what he saw, his interpretation had to have been that the guy was shaking his head like he's innocent.
Yeah, exactly. And look, whether it was because of what Nasser did in the courtroom, the shaking of the head.
Right.
And, you know, it's often different. I don't know if he's ever seen him personally. Maybe this is the first time that he's been in the same room. I don't know the circumstances.
Right.
Or maybe it's the second or third time. But something happens when you see that person and they're within striking distance. And you have all of this pent-up emotion, rightfully so. I do not like that the internet has hailed this gentleman a hero. He's a hero for speaking up. And I'm glad he's come forward now and he's apologized.
Right.
He said he shouldn't have done it. I wonder if he went and premeditated knowing he was going to do that, knowing that he would be stopped, or whether this was pure rage. But regardless of the motivation, just worries me when we start to put this sort of behavior on a pedestal, because I would love to separate completely, and it's almost impossible to do so, but the families of victims and the sentencing procedures. We have courts of law. We have a set of laws, a set of sentencing procedures that need to be kind of separated from emotion a little bit, in a way. It's almost impossible to do so. The judge had a really long statement in terms at the sentencing of Nasser. But this is why we don't let victims' families choose sentencing. This is why we have a judge that hands these things down.
Well, sentencing based on the law.
Yes.
There are specific laid out limits.
Right.
A range that a judge can choose.
Right. 708 says, hell no, the father should not be held in contempt. And I imagine that's how most people feel. And maybe that's fine. Maybe he shouldn't be in prison. Or if he had to go to a cell to cool down for a few minutes, that's fine. But I just do not find this father to be a hero.
And when you bring that up, when you say people are calling him a hero, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
I'm
seeing it everywhere on social media.
I understand that.
And
again,
I'm so proud of this father.
I'm just seeing the news stories of what happened.
Right.
I can't understand how a person, I'm with you.
Yeah.
What is he a hero for?
Right.
Is he a hero that he went after this guy?
Yeah.
The courts have already done that.
Right.
This guy will never see the light of day again.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been publicly and personally shamed. He has had his life ripped from him.
Rightfully so.
In whatever way possible that can nowhere come near to the feeling that these women have had to deal with.
Yeah.
Now, that probably is where the father's anger came from.
And he even said in his apology, he said the one thing he didn't want to do is take attention away from his brave daughters.
Exactly.
And he's right there. So, you know, maybe I'm being, and look, when you weigh these things on the scale, clearly, the outrage should be on Nasser more than anything up at this spot. Just this behavior, I just don't like when we all rally behind behavior that I think should be out of our courtrooms and that sort of thing. But again, I'm not a dad, so maybe if this had happened to my kids, I'd be doing the same thing, and who am I to judge? So if you've got an opinion on that, 312-981-7200, feel free to put me in my place. We got to take a quick commercial break. More John Hanson in for Matt Babala on 720 WGN after this. WGN 720, happy February 3rd, everybody. Happy Saturday morning to you all. Hope you're having a wonderful day out there today through the overnight hours. John Hanson in for Matt Babala here on this Saturday morning, this chilly one, bone chilly out there. Hopefully things are going to warm up a little bit today before we get some snowfall. Roger will have all those details coming up in just a little bit. I'm going to call him on early, so I hope he's ready for us. We got Blake Stubbs joining us. Blake Stubbs, a movie critic, joins anytime I fill in, and joins obviously with Dane Neal. Blake Stubbs, how you doing, my friend?
Hello, good morning. I'm doing quite well. I'm wide awake at 2:24 in the morning. That's That's a bit of an achievement for me.
Yeah.
At least at this time, of year, and, you know, especially on a Saturday morning.
Well, yeah, so. And you've got things going on because Blake and I are former speech team people. If you don't know what speech team is, it's a competitive forensics event and dramatic and humorous events and radio speaking extemp. And you're judging a regional event down Central Illinois today, right, Blake?
I am. This is the first of, you know, a 3-week state series of tournaments that goes on every year. And then I believe it culminates in Peoria, Illinois, mm-hmm. In 3 weeks' time. But that first week is sort of the testing grounds. We got to see what teams have put together. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to judging. It'll be my first time this year. I usually do it a couple times a year, but I'm sort of walking right into the lion's den this time.
Yeah, walking right into
regionals. That makes three of us.
Wait, are you judging regionals, Roger?
Well, I used to judge, and I used to compete.
Oh, you were a speech teamer.
Yes.
What events did you do, Roger?
I only did one. What do you think?
Radio speaking.
Thank you.
How'd you do?
My senior year, the first round? Sectionals?
Regionals. Well, maybe it used to just be sectional back in your day.
There were three of them.
Regional, sectional, state.
Okay, so I did regionals. I won in that.
Yeah.
And I went on to sectionals, and I got cocky.
Oh.
And, you know, there's five rounds.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's
two,
intense.
3 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. And I got really like, hey, I got this wrapped up, you know? And I blew my times. I blew my pacing. I blew the words. Uh-huh. I blew. Because you got to prepare them there. You can't prepare them, right?
For those of you who don't know, radio speaking, you get a packet of news,
mm-hmm.
and you have 45 minutes to literally, with scissors and tape, cut and paste a newscast together. And Roger, as I can tell, that experience really haunted you, and you never went anywhere in your career after
that. No, I gave it up right there, and I went into insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I did radio speaking as well, Roger, but I got second in state. So sorry, Roger. I advanced a little bit further than you did.
I feel so inferior.
I still remember the name of the person who beat me, though, Ryan Swearingen, and he's a urologist now. So who's doing better in radio, Ryan?
Hey,
Blake Stubbs was fifth in state in impromptu speaking, Blake?
I was an impromptu speaker and an extemporaneous speaker. And then I actually coached radio for 4 years as part of a team, my old high school's team. We all got our roots, man, and I think it's just a natural thing that we kind of came to radio.
I
was at Evanston.
Oh, yeah, that's
and,
right.
And I coached there for a while back in... Oh, after I got out of college, I went back there for a little time, just hung out there and was coaching a little bit. And then I came back when I became a teacher. I coached there 96 through 2000.
Wonderful. I still coach at Downers Grove South, actually.
Well, look at you.
16-time state champion, Downers Grove South, and including last year.
You know, I'm just going to go in the other room. Have fun.
Well, Roger, you got about 3 minutes to
join you guys. I'll see you later.
So, Blake, we're going to get to news in about 2 or 3 minutes, so we're just going to start our conversation here. Obviously, yesterday was Groundhog's Day, and, I mean, it is a cult classic, of course, the Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, Groundhog's Day, a movie that is played over and over, of course, on Groundhog's Day. And really, I was reading a little bit about it. It wasn't necessarily the most popular movie when it came out. It really is kind of... gained this cult classic status.
It is. It's one of those movies, I think, that has that slow burn, has picked up steam, you know, in its post-theatrical release life. I wouldn't say it's one of those movies from Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, one of those movies that gets, you know, quoted as often. But when it does, it clicks with, you know, the people who see it, remember it, and know it. And for one of those reasons, like... Groundhog Day is one of those movies that you can watch anytime. It has one of Bill Murray's best performances, I think, that just runs, you know, the whole table as far as like what you want out of an actor. And at the same time, like, it's kind of a fascinating film to read about the production of. It actually led to sort of the dissolution of the friendship between Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, that they were able to bury the hatchet before Ramis's untimely passing. But at the same time, I think it brought out the best in both, and at the same time picked up its steam and found its life, and it's now one of those primary, you know, key comedies that people want to go to and quote and watch. And, you know, I mean, the fact that it centers around a certain holiday, I think also, you know, gives it that life every year, even if it's one of those that you just don't necessarily want to watch. It, when the day hits, you're like, oh, I'm going to watch Groundhog Day today. And now it has life on Broadway as a musical as well, which it's done quite well on its stage run.
Do you think that the movie stands up? I mean, have you watched it recently enough? And because, you know, comedies, it's so hard. I mean, I think dramas and actions and those sorts of movies stand up over time just because of their nature. But, you know, the senses of humor's change, and over time, certain comedies lose that luster or regain it depending on the, you know, the year it was, or depends on how old you were and the time that the movie was released. Have you seen it recently enough, and do you feel like the Groundhog's Day really does stand up to the test of time?
I have, and I will just be very honest. I actually watched it last night after I got off work. So, and it was one of those things where I was like, you know what? I haven't actually sat and watched Groundhog's Day in a few years. I think I'm going to do it. So I went ahead, and I was like, well, I'm glad we're going to talk about it on the radio. But coming into this, like, thinking about the comedy in that film, I think it's all very slice of life type comedy. Now, obviously, like, you know, there's a lot of intricacies in the premise and the plot device of this whole, like, living this day over and over again. But a lot of the material in the movie doesn't date itself too well. I mean, yes, it takes place before everybody had cell phones, and yes, social media doesn't really factor into it. But all of the key essentials that you need to relive a day over and over again and try to experience it differently and better yourself throughout each and every time you do it, I think that it still resonates. I don't think that it's the type of comedy that is, like, you know, encapsulated in its time and we can't really go back. Now, you know, in the social climate that we live in today, I'm sure there are, and I can think of a few things that, you know, might be viewed as problematic, but at the time, like, they weren't, and they're kind of stuck in that time. Mm-hmm. But at the same note, I think that all of the comedy, you know, being people, for better or worse, I think it still plays. Yeah. And I think it plays to even a younger-ish audiences that might experience the film for the first time today.
Blake, we got to take a break. I'd love to continue the Groundhog Day talk just because it is a love story in itself, and we're going to talk about love stories. So you got some queued up for us, right? You'll be ready after the other side of the news?
Oh, absolutely. All right, ready to go.
Rick Stubbs is going to stay on the line. So 312-91-7200, I'd love for you to get in your favorite movie love stories. It's a month of love, whether you like it or not. Valentine's Day just around the corner. Many Roger Badish celebrations in the household. Tell us what your favorite love story is in the movies. Give us a call or send us a text at 312-981-7200. Okay, we're a little late for news. It's 2:32, so we go up to the newsroom, and here's Roger Badish. WGN 2:36 on this Saturday morning. Roger, that's how happy we were about the snow that's coming.
Yeah,
that we had to bump on in with that music a little bit.
Skis?
No, actually, I'm going to be skiing a little bit for the jam for WCIU.
Oh, really?
With the Winter Games coming up.
Well, that's right. Yeah,
many of the days on the morning show, I'm going to be trying to replicate some of the events. So I've got curling set up. I'm going to do some curling in a little bit. I've got some skiing. I'm trying to actually find former Olympians to race against in all these things or to compete against, because I feel like there's no better way to show off how impressive these athletes are than to have me go against them. I raced an Olympic swimmer once, a former Olympic swimmer, for not even for the United States. He was for one of the Eastern European countries. He's from the United States.
Uh-huh.
Great guy. We were at a pool, and we raced, and he gave me, so we did just two laps, like we're back and forth, right?
Okay.
Freestyle.
Right.
And we did, he gave me a head start of an entire lap, so I went all the way down before he started, right?
Okay.
I then got out of the pool and ran back. And he, Roger, he still beat me.
No!
Yes! It is insane. And this guy is now in his late 30s.
Oh,
so he hasn't actually been an Olympic swimmer. I think he was in the 00 games or the 04 games, maybe. And it was just insane that he gave me a lap head start to swim. He didn't start swimming until I got out of the pool to run back. And he still beat me. Well, now, I mean, I'm not the most athletic guy in the world. I'm not the best swimmer in the world. And I'm not the best runner in the world. But that's insane.
Yeah. And you're lucky I wasn't there as the lifeguard.
Yeah, I would have.
I would have stopped you as you got out of the pool and started to run.
Yeah,
because young man, there is no running.
I don't think
around the pool.
I don't think the pool staff was too happy I was doing that. That's why I didn't tell him beforehand that I was doing that.
I want you to go on the ski jump.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Oh my god, that's like the actual. I don't think I'll do that. I think I'm just gonna mogul or something like that. But
okay, we
can hold this for the 3 o'clock discussion because
yeah, okay,
we got Blake Stubbs joining us here. Blake, I bet you're of no surprise that I was beaten in the swimming pool by an Olympic swimmer.
Not even remotely. I've seen you swim and I've seen you run.
It's something.
It's a sight to behold. If we want to bring a little Howard Cosell into it, but yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all. But at the same time, I appreciate your effort out there, John.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
All right, so we're talking. It's February. We're going to be talking about love all month long. Love is in the air. Valentine's Day, all that crud, and the movies are. This is the time of year really to cozy up and watch a love movie with your special boo or watch a love movie with a glass of whiskey and cry about it or something. But Blake, I mean, to try and narrow down love in movies is kind of an insane perspective because, I mean, a lot of movies are obviously centered around a couple or centered around the idea of love. It's so involved in our everyday lives as well. So when I asked you to start doing this task, did you just start like just running through a ton of movies and just starting kind of clicking some off the box? Did you try and pick a few different types of love stories? Where did you even start with this process?
Every time I come on WGN, what I try to do is when it comes to making up a big list, I can make a list that's 50 movies long. But in the end, what I try to do is pick something that represents a different type of, I guess, subgenre, but still keeping that theme, you mm-hmm. know, like love or romance being a big part of this in some way, in any one of the movies that I'm listing. But yet all of them have their own unique element or trait. Some, you know, might have won Best Picture, but at the same time, some of them just have cult followings. At the same time, some are animated, you know, some are live action, some are comedies, some are dramas.
Mm-hmm.
Some are epic and some are very small and isolated. Some are kind of cheesy. Like,
yeah.
I think that it's important that, you know, when you ask either me or any audience member out there right now, like, if you say, what's your favorite? Like, everyone's favorite is always going to have a personal attachment to it, be it because of a relationship they might be in or have been in, or it's just a movie they saw when they were younger and it's always stayed with them because it played on TV all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, family member introduced them to it and they were like, oh, this is a good movie. And now as they're older, they're like, wow, there's so much in this, you know, that I never thought of when I was younger watching
right.
it. So yeah, I start big and I just try to, like, you know, whittle away at it to make it sort of like a clutch list of, if you're looking for something to watch, these are a few things I might recommend. And I know that, you know, people are going to throw stuff at us. So at the same time, I'm like, you know, whatever list I put together,
yeah,
they're probably going to have some really great contributions that I would have never even thought of.
Certainly. 312-981-7200. Yeah, get in your requests right now, or your requests. Get in your picks for your best love movie. Blake requests. Blake will act out the whole movie for you. No. And I know we got some phone calls coming in already, but Blake, why don't you go ahead and give us, start us off with one of your favorites.
Well, one of my favorites, I want to start, you know, in that the sort of animated category, because I was like, you know, the animated films have touched, you know, different generations of people, and they stick with people much easier because typically you see them when you're younger. But for me, I saw this when I was in college, and it has stuck with me. I think it is a masterpiece. It's a Pixar film, and I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's Up. Well, Up goes hand in hand with this film as two of the best movies about love. But for me, it's WALL-E.
Ah.
You know, WALL-E is story of the small robot who is isolated and alone, and has the cricket, I believe it was, as his friend. But then when he meets a counterpart, another robot, he falls in love with her, and he'll do anything he can to protect her, save her, or be there for her. And I think that it was just such a charming film. I think that it was one of those movies that visually really built a world that audiences could go to in their minds. And at the same time, he doesn't really say much, and neither does she, but they're able to communicate and be so much more just by being around each other than if they were just being robots tasked with a simple job.
Man, I'm pretty impressed. Pretty impressed, Blake. You're starting out with a movie about robots for love stories, but that is
exactly
that definitely tugs on the heartstrings. Hey, we got a phone call from Jim. Jim, you're in the South Loop. Jim, do you have a favorite relationship movie or two to share with us?
Yes, Love's a Many Splendored Thing with Jennifer Jones and Bill Holden. and Farewell to Arms with Rock Hudson and Jennifer Jones.
Oh, Blake Stubbs, two classics there.
I was going to say, Jennifer Jones had some hits when it comes to this type of thing. Those are very good picks. And I definitely think, especially with, you know, those leading men, you know, big Hollywood icons. And at the same time, like back then, those were the types of movies people loved to go see in theaters.
Jim, what was your favorite part about those movies in particular? Why do those stand out to you?
Well, the love of Jennifer Jones she had for Bill Holden. And what Rock Hudson did to get to Jennifer Jones when he was captured by the Italian army for desertion.
Mm-hmm.
It was great love and how he loved her and when she was dying, how he was emotionally affected by it because I lost my wife and it just reminded me so much of that.
Yeah, Jim, and I'm sorry to hear about your wife, and I think that is what Blake's getting at, and thanks for the call, Jim. Blake, what Jim was saying is, you know, he lost his wife, and when those movies, we develop these personal connections with them.
Right, and I mean, in the case of Jim, you know, very sorry to hear about the loss of his wife, and I'm not saying it's because of tragedy that he thinks of these films. You know, he had a whole life with her, and it's that personal attachment. And if I want to speak about the actress that he mentioned that connects both of those films, Jennifer Jones, to me, she always struck me as one who had great chemistry on camera with her counterparts. And so it was very easily relatable for audiences to connect with those films. And I think that, you know, like I said, great mentions and definitely the type of films that if you haven't seen them and, you know, you're sort of exploring your taste in cinema. These are two very good ones. Farewell to Arms specifically, I think that you might want to check out and try to watch soon, especially, you know, in this month of, you know, with Valentine's Day and everything. If you want something different, something new you haven't seen, definitely want to you know, commend Jim for recommending both of those films.
Blake, we're going to squeeze one more in before the break because the 219 texted in, and I know this one's on your list. It's the one that you told me, and 219 says Brokeback Mountain, a great love story.
Brokeback Mountain. It was a film that also came out when I was at university, and I remember seeing it in Champaign, Illinois, and thinking, this film is going to win Best Cinematography, and this film is probably going to win Best Picture, because it is telling a story that we are just, you know, it's an independent, it was sort of an art house, like much smaller style film, but it got the audience that it needed to get, and it told a story that we had not really been seeing on camera, and I think that it was unapologetic, I think it was heart-wrenching, I think it was performance driven. It was beautifully directed. The locations were outstanding. Everything clicked for that movie. And the fact that, you know, especially with another film about, you know, two men falling in love with Call Me By Your Name being nominated for the Oscars this year, I've been hearing a little bit more talk about Brokeback Mountain and what that film meant, especially today, you know, in this day and age, which I appreciate because that film's now about 13 years old.
Which is crazy to me. Yeah, that came out in 2005. So I remember when that came out. And this is interesting. That movie came out before I came out and a couple of years beforehand. You knew me back then. And I remember seeing that movie as a closeted gay guy and just being like, I cannot believe I'm actually watching this. And I think, you know, there have been gay themed movies, of course. And Will and Grace have been on TV long before this. It wasn't the first gay love story ever told in cinema. But I think it was the first one that really, like you said, Blake, was so unapologetic. It showed scenes that no other movie really had dared to show. And it was so heartbreaking. But correct. In many ways, it was wildly traditional in its love story in a sort of way. You know, there was something just very, just like you'd see between a man and a woman. And I think that made it just feel so everyday and normal in a way. Something that whether you're straight, whether you're gay, no matter what, you could relate to what was going on in Brokeback Mountain.
Exactly. At the end of like the screening, I remember walking out and saying, I don't care what anybody has to say about this, love it or hate it. In the end, that was a love story. And I think that they told that story so effectively that to have been a smaller film in terms of scale, in terms of money backing it, in terms of, you know, a lot of things that can go against a movie of its kind. Everything just went so well for it. And I'm glad that it was, you know, recognized. I'm glad that it's still talked about, especially today. And again, like I can still vividly remember images, you know, coming to mind from that film and saying, you know what, that's one of the most beautifully shot films films I've seen in easily the last 10 years. Now we're beyond its 10-year birthday.
Yeah.
But I just remember saying, like, that's going to win Best Cinematography. And I little truth. That was back when I was a radio journalist in college, and I had free access to a theater here. I could just go and see screenings whenever I wanted to. It was the greatest thing ever. But they actually, that night, they wanted people to come see it, so they said, bring any of your friends that you want, and 8 people showed up. We were all congregated together for, like, a private screening, and by the end of it, the conversation, you know, that was a buzz at the end of the film, you knew you had seen something special.
Right.
So, yes. Brokeback Mountain is definitely very high on the list of greatest love stories in cinema, in my opinion. And I'm glad that we got to talk about it tonight, especially because I feel like not a lot of people do. I don't want a movie like that to be forgotten.
Yeah, and, you know, people forget how quickly things have moved for the LGBT movement. 2005 doesn't sound like that long ago. But yeah, 13 years, things were way different even 13 years ago for the LGBT movement. And it really was, looking back, a real brave film to make, and especially to get 2 actors in there who were widely respected and loved across Hollywood.
Yes.
to do that movie, and it wasn't just 2 unnamed people. These were 2 big names doing this movie. I don't know. It was wonderful. All right, Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break, okay?
Yep, sounds great.
All right, you'll stick around with us. More love stories. Please send us your love stories, 312-981-7200. Your love stories or your favorite love stories in the movies. More coming up on 720 WGN. WGN 720 WGN. John Hansen filling in for Matt Bubala on this Saturday morning, 2:52, and we got Blake Stubbs on the line. And Blake is a movie critic who we often chat with, and it's the month of love it or hate it. It's February, so everyone's in love for Valentine's Day, or they hate it and they can't wait to talk about how much they hate Valentine's Day. Everyone's got a very strong opinion on it one way or the other. And Blake Stubbs and I were talking about love movies, the best love movies of all time, or the best love relationships that you see in movies of many different genres. We've gotten 2 out, and they've been, I guess you can call them non-traditional. I think a lot of people gravitate towards rom-coms, Blake, but we've gotten a love between robots and cowboys to start off.
Yeah. I told you, I try to narrow it down. I try to show love for all subgenres. I don't think when you said, you know, best love movies, you know, best love stories, cinematic love stories, I was like, oh, I can't just go with the obvious ones. But, you know, some of the obvious ones have to be brought up.
Yeah,
I think
for
that's
sure.
Important.
Well, Jess is an obvious one. So, Jess, really quickly, what's your favorite love story, by the way?
The Notebook.
Okay.
So precious.
I've actually never seen The Notebook.
What?
I know.
I have.
What do you think, Blake?
We can jam. You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm not the biggest. I believe Nicholas Sparks. That's the universe that we're speaking in. Am I right, Jess? That's the world. The author. The guy that created the mythos of, you know, books that have turned into films. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I think he's actually coming out with a new one in theaters.
Ooh.
Might have just released, actually.
Is it called The Trapper Keeper? Or, like, what have we upgraded in terms of... Right, anyways, bad joke. Keep going, Blake. Save me.
So with The Notebook, I mean, I'm not going to ever knock people who love The Notebook. I'm not going to knock the film. I remember seeing it in theaters. I remember being, you know, hopelessly single at the time because it came out many years ago. But at the same time, I liked the people in it. This is Ryan Gosling. This is Rachel McAdams. They have some visuals in that film that really stick with the audiences, like the kiss in the rain and the argument, you know, that those two have. There's some comedy within that, too. I think it's one of those romantic films that has a little bit of everything in it, but at the same time, it feels like a more traditional love story that, you know, it's evolved over time.
Hey,
you know, they didn't just get together and that was it. It developed over time throughout these two characters' lives.
Blake, we have some breaking news. Jess just told me something in my ear. Jess, can you tell this to all the listeners right now?
I think that John looks a little bit like Ryan Gosling.
That is the biggest compliment I've ever received in my life, and I cannot say BS more than ever in my life. Blake Stubbs, who you know me well, I don't think I resemble Ryan Gosling in the slightest, but I'll take it, Jess.
It's got to be the beard.
I was going to say, I'll give you a little bit of that Notebook Ryan Gosling, especially when he grows his hair out. But I'm not going to go with Drive Ryan Gosling or Blade Runner Ryan Gosling. I want to make sure people know they're Gosling and keep them separated.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's I could see it. I don't want to inflate his ego a little too much. But
go to WGNRadio.com, watch the live stream, and tell you what to say. Oh, she just now says it's the dreamy eyes. Yeah, okay, I'm wearing my glasses today too, but half awake. All right, in for Matt Bobalo. We got a couple texts more coming in, Blake, and we'll continue to get your picks. 312 says, An Affair to Remember makes me cry every time. I love it. And I believe we're going back to 1957 for that one. An Affair to Remember. Blake, have you seen that before?
I remember seeing that ages ago. I might have been on like AMC or Turner Classic Movies or something along those lines. But it's one of those that I saw it. It's Cary Grant. Yeah. So I'm pulling it up because I don't want to say anything incorrect. But yes, 1957, Cary Grant. Yes, I remember this movie, but I don't remember it more vividly than, say, something like a couple that are on my list. And I'll give you one of them right now. What I think is one of the all time greats, Casablanca.
Yeah.
Casablanca. It's one of those that it kind of rips at the heartstrings. But you know that, you know, love isn't always fair and love isn't always just this giving thing. Like sometimes it can be a life changing ordeal, for better or worse. And I think Casablanca really highlights that. There's a lot of, you know, Second World War, Nazis on the rise. You've got Americans and you've got, you know, foreign nationals. Everything's culminating at once. It's a real powder keg scenario. But it's also just one of those beautifully told stories. And Affair to Remember falls into that category, too. Back when they were making these classic love stories, and I would call them classics because, you know, classic Hollywood, that's the era coming from. I think that they had a real hook, much like right now, the hook is for the audience is on these superhero, you know, Marvel Universe type scenarios or Star Wars, you know, everything's a franchise now. That's the argument. Back then, it was trying to put butts in the seats to see these films that showed, you know, the best side of humans, which is when they're truly in love with each other. And in some cases, it was because it was a great thing to just go to a movie theater and go someplace else for a while. You know, and not have to deal with the daily grind or the thing that ails you. And they've always found the right people, you know, and they were gorgeous people. But they always found the people to be on camera and tell these stories.
You mentioned that love isn't always fair in Casablanca and that sort of thing. And that's the sort of love movies I sort of gravitate towards. The ones where they end up together in the end and it's all peachy always drive me crazy. And while that happens in real life, I'm sure many of our listeners Roger happily married for 42 years. There's lots of love out there and love lasts. There's plenty of other stories of heartbreak and your first love isn't your lasting love. And I know this is so recent and it's almost cliche to go to, but this is what I loved about La La Land. Not only was it a great movie with the great music, but it was that moment that the two main characters, and spoiler alert on La La Land, can I spoil alert on this? Is that okay? Spoiler alert on La La Land, they don't end up together, and there's this beautiful moment where she's with her new husband later on, and she goes and she sees her old love performing, and there's this moment where they look at each other, and they realize that they had this love, they don't have it anymore, she's happy, he's happy, everyone's moved on with their lives, maybe we are all don't have that one person we're meant to be with, maybe just like life, it's complicated. You can love one person and then move on and fall in love and still have a very happy life. Like, that's what I loved about it. She was still happy in her new life, but obviously had still some feelings and they shared a moment and then that was it. I don't know. Like, I loved that ending of La La Land.
I think that's what La La Land and Casablanca share. And for me, it's always been this very simple point. They may not be together, but the love that they had defines a big portion of who they are and who they've become and the happiness that they've found. And I think that in La La Land, it's much more apparent. You know, each one sort of branches off after the relationship ends and they find the thing that they've been looking for. They're able to become what they were always meant to be. But if they hadn't met, if they hadn't crossed paths, if they hadn't had that relationship, would they have been more of the same? Would things have worked out?
Yeah.
And I think that the film, because it's a musical, I think, you know, like a true musical, like I think it really does say that love is a defining characteristic of who they are as people. So yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, Casablanca has a lot of other different, you know, elements to it going on. But at the same time, it's a matter of like, look, if you don't get on that plane, you're going to regret it every day for the rest of your life. And, you know, we had our time and it was amazing and I'll never forget it, but you got to go. And that's, you know what I mean? And it's, it's heart-wrenching for anyone who has had to give up something that meant so much to them. But they know that if they don't, it's going to lead to problems. And it's not going to be, you know, that lightning in a jar that it once was.
Blake, you're hitting hitting me in all the feels right now, and I think you know why. But we got to take a quick break for the news. We got some more texts coming in. Please keep on coming. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you on the phone as well. We're going to be chatting with Blake Stubbs in the next hour as well about the best love stories of all time. Whether they end up together at the end, and that's why you cry and love it, or whether they don't end up, whether they're separated and they never get together. Let's all wrench our hearts out here on morning radio here, very early morning radio. But it is 3 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's 3 o'clock. We go to the newsroom with Roger Badish.
It's been said and done. Every beautiful thought's been already sung. And I guess right now, here's another one. So you meant
720 WGN, John Hanson filling in for Matt Bubala. And when I think of Blake Stubbs, who's joining us to talk about love movies, I think of Selena Gomez, of course. So, Blake, that one was for you, buddy.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
We're talking love movies here. I'm filling in until 5 o'clock, and it's February, which of course means it's the month of love, love it or hate it. And we're talking about our favorite, either the love, it's a favorite movie that features love as its main theme, or just a certain relationship in a movie that where there's love involved, love lost maybe, and that exemplifies. And send us text 312-981-7200, or give us a call 312-981-7200. Blake's got some more on his list as well. We're going to be getting to. I always love when callers or texters can give Blake some homework so that he is the movie that he hasn't seen. And Blake, I know you love that when you get that from the listeners.
I do, because I mean, at the same time, like, I watch a lot of stuff, okay? And oftentimes it's usually something someone recommends. And I try to keep my ear, you know, close to the pulse of what's coming out or what's new or what I should see. But every now and again, someone will throw me a curveball and it's like, wait a minute, I have never seen that, or I've never heard of it.
Right.
And I love that.
So the next,
I can't see it all, but I would love to.
Yeah, exactly. 815 texts in. The movie The Professional, starring a young Natalie Portman, was a great love story that this hard stone cold killer was changed by a little girl. Interesting. I never heard of that one.
Yes, Leon is another name the film goes by. It was the film that really put director Luc Besson on the map in the United States. Nikita, La Femme Nikita, was his creation as well. But that movie stars Jean Reno, Natalie Portman. She was about 12 years old. And then as well as a really great performance by Gary Oldman, who was nominated for an Oscar this year for Best Acting. It's about a hitman who sort of crosses paths with this young girl whose family has been murdered, killed, and he takes her in, and he takes care of her, and she takes care of him. I'm not trying to make it sound shady. What I'm saying is he's very isolated and he doesn't interact with people, whereas she is a young girl who loves to interact with people, and at the same time he wants to protect her. So there is a love story there. It's quite familial in its essence. There have been occasional, you know, like, I've got a little bit of a weird eye to look at this. But when I saw it, I was younger, but I remember seeing it as the type of film where it was this guy who was just wandering through life and he was killing people for a living. Bad people, mind you. Mm-hmm. But he was killing people for a living, and this young girl needed help, and he found purpose in what he did.
Interesting.
And there is a love story there that I think that's a good pick. that's a good pick for a lot of reasons. It's a very well-made film. It's beautifully acted. It is an action film, but it doesn't come off like, say, Avengers. When I say action film, I don't want people to go down this route of it being like, oh, it's popcorny. It's not. It's actually, it's a very 90s film, and I think it's one worth picking up. But Leon or The Professional or Leon the Professional, you can find it any which way of those three names.
630 yeah, texts in with Once, a 2006 film about a vacuum repairman moonlighting as a street musician. I can already hear you loving this one, Blake.
Yep. I can, because this did win best, this won an Oscar, I believe, for best foreign film because it came out of Ireland. But it also has had a very successful life as a Broadway musical. And it is full of great music. It's about two people who cross paths. You know, I don't like using the term star-crossed in that case, because I think that they were just bound to meet. And it was just going to happen. And the relationship that forms from that, I think, is a very pure relationship. I think it is beautifully told, both in film and on stage. I've seen it live as well. And, yeah, that's one of those more modern love stories that I think is... It's got Irish storytelling roots, so there's a lot of richness in the characters and the evolving relationship that is. But at the same time... there's songs that you'll sing, whether you see the film or the stage play, they'll stick with you. So yeah, Once is definitely one that I don't like to leave off the table.
312,
wasn't on my list tonight, but I'm glad somebody threw that in.
312-981-7200. We got a lot of texts coming in, Blake. Bridges of Madison County. I chuckle only because it's one of those classic ones. That when I was a kid, I remember that movie was highly promoted, and my parents loved that one.
Yeah, no, Clint Eastwood, Meryl Streep, that's a very big one. That one almost falls in the category of, for our generation, John, I'd say it's one of the sleepers.
Yeah.
It's like it missed us because we were just too young. But, and it does, it's not a comedy. You know, it's not a romantic comedy. It's not, so to find that as an adult, I think, and watch it, you'll give it the due that it deserves. Also a film that has gone on to have a very successful run on Broadway as a musical. That I'm glad, it's funny, I think Broadway's on to something. I think they figured out that they can take these love stories, translate them to the stage, and they can very easily connect with live audiences as well. And Bridges of Madison County, very much so. Especially, I remember that being one of the first films that, as I was growing up, and I won't begin to go into movies like Sophie's Choice, but Meryl Streep was on my radar because of that film at a young age. So, you know, to know that there's two big titans of the movie industry on screen and they're telling a love story that otherwise I don't know that they would have worked together is interesting. And I think it's a beautiful film that people should watch.
262 has one. Blake, I don't know if you're going to have seen this one. Then we're going back to 1945, okay?
Okay.
The Enchanted Cottage. Robert Young, Dorothy McGuire.
I'll admit it. I have not seen it, and that is now my homework. Yeah. Walking away from this this interview, The Enchanted Cottage. I'm writing it down right now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean the cast alone intrigues me. The fact it's from 45 tells me a great deal that I'm probably going to enjoy it. I'm one of those guys that all my favorite films came out before 1979. So anytime someone recommends something that I haven't seen, I'm always going to make a big push for it. So thank you.
All right. We've got a lot of text still coming back. Oh, we got another one going back to 1942, New Voyager with Betty Davis and I can't even say Paul's last name here. A great love story. The ending always brings me to tears. And Betty Davis says, Jerry, don't let us ask for the moon while we have the stars. That's from Barb, the 847.
Is it Now Voyager?
Voyager.
It should be Now Voyager.
Now Voyager. Did I say New Voyager?
Well, I think you did.
Barb wrote Now Voyager, yeah, which now is Voyager. Correct. So that was my fault. I don't know if you've seen that.
Betty
Blake.
Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and Claude Rains. So, yeah, you got me. You hooked me. Claude Rains.
A couple more texts for An Affair to Remember. What about Hitman? A great movie. This is from the 815, an old classic that I love. Also, The Quiet Man with John Wayne. So we got some throwbacks here.
Yeah, The Quiet Man is a big one. John Ford, you know, and I remember vividly when I was younger, back when VHS was a big thing and you would tape stuff off television. There was a movie I was taping, and I think it might have been Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. But the tail end of The Quiet Man is at the beginning of the tape. Like, you know, I said it too early. And so all you do when you put the tape in is you get the tracking error, and then the tracking would fix. And then John Wayne gets in a fight. And it lasts like 8 minutes long. And then, all right, we're in love and hug, kiss, and the movie ends. And then it's like,
bam,
yeah, very, not, and I'm, I look, that is 100% a true story. So I want to make sure people know, like, The Quiet Man, though, is one of those John Ford films that I think people should see. It's a good love story. It is funny. And it's still, I think it's still funny today to sit and watch it. And it absolutely, and it takes place in Ireland. So, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where back then when they could make movies on location in other countries and show another part of the world and not just live on a back lot, I think that's a big reason why those movies succeeded. And to show a love story or, you know, a war film or anything like that to audiences, you know, that, you know, grew up in small towns or even, you know, a city like Chicago back then, I think it helped make cinema, you know, the transportive, like, art form that it is. And I think that The Quiet Man definitely falls in that category for me. And again, I've got a weird little story as to why that film, you know, I've seen it. I've definitely seen the end of it more times than the rest of it. But at the same time, that's one that I think anybody, if you haven't seen that, definitely get a hold of it.
Oh, the old taping things to VHS. So funny. Before we get to break, really quickly, Blake, the 708 has a question for me, but I'm going to forward it right on to you. 708 asks, am I the only one that thinks Natural Born Killers is a love story?
No, it is a love story. Love stories can be unconventional. There's no, there's nothing that says that a love story has to be flowery and fun and cute or heart-wrenching and terrible. It can be wild and untamed and, in this case, campy, because that film is much campier than I think the writer. Okay, it was directed by Oliver Stone, but Quentin Tarantino wrote it. The film is quite a bit campier than the script's intentions played out, at least in Tarantino's mind, as he put it. It wasn't the film that I wrote. But I definitely would agree. It's a love story. It's an unconventional love story. It's a violent love story.
Yeah.
And it's sort of rooted in that troubled beginnings leads to a troubled path of destruction. But at the same time, you don't doubt these two characters and their feelings toward each other. It's a driving force of the narrative.
All right, Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to continue on after this with more on Blake Stubbs and your favorite love stories in the movies. 312-981-7200. Got a lot more texts to get to. We got a few more from Blake as well coming up here on 720 WGN. Oh, Jess, you're going to break my heart. Great bumping song. Perfect for what we're talking about here. Heartbreak, love, in the movies, in a lot of movies, of course. Blake Stubbs joining us. And Blake, we got a lot to get to here in the next 9 minutes, so I'm going to go through a few of these texts and we can just respond quickly. But I got one from the 630 that I had forgotten, and it just immediately killed me. Castaway. So I think this is a movie with two distinct love stories. The clear one between Tom Hanks and his wife, played by Helen Hunt, and of course Tom Hanks and his volleyball. And both stories end terribly. I mean, both love stories are tragic. And the when he comes, spoiler alert for Castaway, the scene with Helen Hunt at the end is just, it moves me to tears every single time I see that. I think it's a very underrated movie and scene.
I would agree with you. I think that it's one of those where that's a very real response to a very harrowing story. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the real, like,
yes. Response.
Like, when he comes home, I mean, in his mind, you know, that's what got him through it. That's what got him through the whole ordeal, was that he was going to come home and home would be there and everything would be fine. But obviously life takes turns.
They had buried him. I mean, they had buried him.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you have this very If you want to say that, you know, like, oh, well, if a guy was stranded on an island, this, you know, if you want to pick apart, like, parts of the movie and say, no, the very end of the movie, I think, is the most real, natural, and it's both tragic and bittersweet. It's like all of these things rolled into one. And, you know, to commend the actors, they played it so grounded.
Yeah, and,
there
you know,
no, you know,
you're just not mad at either character. They're both right. Like, it's one of those movies you just go, damn. You can't. There's nothing you can do.
Right. And I think that it renders you, the audience, in a way a bit helpless, just like the characters in the film. Because, you know, you're rooting for this guy throughout the whole film. And at the same time, you know, there is resolution for him. I don't want to say that there's not. But at the same time, yeah. And again, just to talk about, like, you know, the volleyball thing I said, you know, love can be unconventional and everything. I always, you know, that was him trying to maintain some sense of drive. You know, he created something so that he could continue on and have a means of bouncing off his consciousness in sort of a verbal outward way so that he didn't isolate and lose his mind and then just die on that island. So, you know, when it's time for Wilson to disappear, it's time for Wilson to disappear.
Yeah.
It's all like the strokes of the story flow so well. And again, spoiler alert, yes, I apologize. But I think that that film, yeah, I think it's underrated for that reason alone. I think it was a really ambitious film. I mean, you know, Tom Hanks, like, filmed the beginning of the film and then disappeared for like 9 months and then, you know, grew facial hair and all these other things. In fact, Robert Zemeckis made a whole movie. He made the movie, I believe, What Lies Beneath, in the time it took Tom Hanks to go from being,
yes,
you know, the guy that works FedEx to looking like the castaway, which is quite miraculous.
Yeah, it really is.
I know that a whole movie was made while that was being made. Like, it's unreal. But at the same time, yeah, I think that's a very... For something miraculous, like someone being cast away on an island to then survive it and then come home, there is reality, I think, and grounded reality for that, those characters in the end.
Blake, I'm going to list a bunch of them. I'm going to list a bunch here because we're going to plow through a few of these. Maybe pick one of the next 10 that I'm about to read to talk about, but I want to get some text here. 630 says, Lost in Translation and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. We've got Brian Song, The Pride of the Yankees. Yep. Walk to Remember on Golden Pond, Forever Young with Mel Gibson. We've got Bonnie and Clyde and Thelma and Louise for love stories. Again, these are some unconventional ones. 815, best love story movie is Pretty Woman. Again, kind of sort of unconventional in ways. And I think that those are maybe the movies that sticks. And, oh, here's an interesting one. 6-year-old, can Hoosiers count? Since the very last line, as the camera zooms in on the picture of the state championship team hanging on the wall of the gym while the young boy is shooting baskets, the memory of Gene Hackman. Is that a memory of Gene Hackman saying, I love you guys? They bring up a good point. I think a lot of those movies, it's not necessarily about this rom-com love story. It's about these unconventional ones.
It is. It's not always black and white. It's not always, when you say a love story, it's not the same thing. I mean, like, you know, someone said Natural Born Killers, you know, when we're mentioning all of these other types of films, from WALL-E to Natural Born Killers, that's a pretty, pretty broad spectrum. But I don't disagree. I think that love is a very open concept. And I think that, you know, yeah, I would, for that alone, I would say that love is a key element. Love, passion, drive, you know, respect, pushing, you know, people to reach levels of excellence, to be winners and Hoosiers. I think that definitely counts. It's just not, when you say a love story, people usually think it's between two people. You know, it's this relationship. It doesn't have to just be that. You know, for me, I always, the one movie that I go to, because I haven't mentioned a romantic comedy yet, one that I go to and I want to just talk a little bit about is When Harry Met Sally, which I think is the definitive romantic comedy. If you want one that is good, that is funny, that, you know, and it was written by Nora Ephron, you know, who tragically passed in the last few years, but stars Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. Carrie Fisher is also in the film, who also recently passed tragically. But the whole premise of the film is these two people meet when they're leaving college. And for years, they're just friends, you know, and they have their own relationships and lives to live, but they keep coming back to each other as friends. And then finally, they get together. And there's something to be said for the persistence of that friendship, that love that started out simply as friendship. And by the way, they didn't start out that way. I mean, they were polar opposites as far as people, but they grew, and in growing, they grew together. And I think that the spattering throughout the film, it's like this nice little garnish of, you know, these stories being told by these older couples that, you know, how they got together and how long they've been together and what their lives were like and what their lives were like before they got together, all of those things. That just helps, you know, ground the film in a reality that love doesn't come one way or another. It's not this ideal that everybody's told from a young age that you're going to meet someone and that's going to be it. Things just happen. And sometimes you find it. And I think When Harry Met Sally encapsulates that, which is sort of what we've been, I think, driving towards in this whole conversation about cinematic love stories. I think it encapsulates all of it. It's unconventional. It's funny. It's tear-jerking. It's all of it. And if you haven't seen that film and you've been waiting for somebody to recommend it to you, then this is me telling you.
Yeah,
watch it, because I think it's going to hit you some way. It's going
to
hit you.
All right, let's get to a phone call before we wrap things up. We're going up to Kenosha. Glenn, what's your love story that you can't get enough of?
Well, there's a lot of movies I can't get enough of, but what dreams become with Robin Williams.
Oh,
now I know this. It wasn't critically the best movie in the world. I loved the movie. I loved the visuals of it. It's not just a movie of a man, a love for a man for a woman, but for his family, who if you've seen the movie, and you know how it is. And I just think it's a stunning movie to begin with. And he basically, they all die, but he's willing.
Well, I don't mean to laugh at that. It's just that's a good spoiler to put out there.
But he's willing to spend the rest of eternity with his wife in heaven or hell, wherever she is, than to be without her.
Yeah.
It's
one I've got to add to my list. Hey, Glenn, we appreciate the phone call. We got to get the news here in just a few moments. Blake, any thoughts on What Dreams Become?
What Dreams May Come, yes, definitely. It's one of those films that visually was a stunner. The film looked like a painting while with live actors. And I think it was a very transportive film. I think that the presence of Robin Williams' character, you know, doing whatever he could to be with his wife for eternity is something people want to connect with. They want to believe in that. That's a version of love that anyone can get behind. And just a moment to mention about how it wasn't too critically loved, I vividly recall, and I just looked it up, Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars and was a very big fan of that film. So it did get a little bit of critical love. I would say a lot of critical love where it matters. And Chicago's own, very much big fan. My hero loved it. And I remember seeing it and thinking, this is such an offbeat type film for Robin Williams to be in, because it's not funny guy Robin Williams. My dial wasn't turned to know, to be ready for, you know, the really impactful Robin Williams,
right,
which you got in movies like Good Will Hunting. This falls in that category, and I think it's one of the more forgotten roles of his. So very good pick, especially to round out this segment.
Well, yeah, and we're going to wrap it up with this last one, and we don't have to talk too much about it because I think most people have seen it, but we've talked about all these unconventional ones. Maybe the most conventional one, the one that we've all probably seen or fallen in love with, it's the most conventional of the ones we've mentioned, Princess Bride, Blake.
Oh, well, that's definitely on my list. In fact, I think I've mentioned Princess Bride more times than any film
and
all the times I've been on WGN.
Yes.
So come on. It's a fairy tale from beginning to end. It's beautifully told. It's beautifully acted. Andre the Giant's in it. You can't go wrong. but at the same time, it's got swashbuckling, you know, sword fighting. It's got witches and wizards. It's got everything. And I think it's one of those where sometimes you just want a really good fairy tale. And The Princess Bride is that movie. It always will be that movie. It never fails to hit, and it always will. And it doesn't matter how old you are, it's going to connect with somebody. So, yes, The Princess Bride. I'm glad I got it in there. I'm glad I got to mention it because I always do.
Blake,
it is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Blake, we could have gone on for about 3 hours with this stuff, but we appreciate your time. You need to get some sleep, about, what, another hour and a half of it before you got to drive to Bloomington for speech. Be nice to the kids, okay?
I will do. And thanks for having me. This was a total pleasure. And I'm definitely going to look up The Enchanted Cottage. So thanks for the homework.
You got some homework too, Blake. All right. Have a good one. Thanks so much for joining us. And it's a little bit late for news. So unfortunately, sorry, Roger. We get these conversations.
And I've been listening to all this stuff.
Do you have a favorite love story in the movies, Roger?
You know, it comes and goes. I'm not a real big love story kind of person. I don't go out for those types of movies necessarily.
Right.
There are movies I like that turn out to be love stories
right.
in one way or another. The Way We Were.
Yes.
You forgot that one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Roger. We forgot it.
You forgot it.
1973.
Hubble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
West Side Story.
Of course.
Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, it has the word love in it. I can't believe we forgot that one. There's plenty of them.
there's a handful. And I just saw another one, but it's not even a traditional love story. Not a man-woman,
mm-hmm.
but it's a family love mm-hmm. type of thing where a lot of barriers are broken down. And it's just out in theaters, and it's also on Amazon Prime at the same time. And I saw it last night, and it's a box full of Kleenex tearjerker.
Really? What is it?
It's called Please Stand By.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Okay.
If you get the chance to see it.
Please Stand By. Yeah. I will have to add that to the list, and I'll send it over to Blake for some extra homework as well. But it's 3:33, and it's news time. So we go up to the lovely man himself, the love man, Roger Badish. My jam is my jam. My jam. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Matt Bubala until 5 this morning, and I'm joined by, well, now you're a friend of the show, Southside Jake. Jake, how you doing today?
I'm a friend now. I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
You're going to have to eat that microphone, by the way.
I'm going to eat it.
You're going to eat it. You're going to get nice and close to that. Southside Jake, and when we say Southside Jake, we're not talking about the south side of Minneapolis. You're a Chicago guy.
Chicago, born and bred. I've been listening to GN since forever, so it's kind of cool to be here. And
GN known for its rap music, by the way.
Yes. Is if you want to make it in hip hop, everyone knows you got to crucify WGN Radio, talk a little love movies, and get a little traffic and weather.
Right.
55 was wide open at 2:30 in the morning on the way in, by the way.
Thanks for that update. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
That's we'll have to keep Jake on after the news, and he can wrap the traffic. Maybe
we'll send him up to the top of the Trib Tower with binoculars and let him take a look-see.
No, it is super cool, though, because, you know, all the nostalgia, you guys are probably used to it, but, you know, you walk by these windows when you're young, and you look in, and I was raised here, and coming down to see, like, the holiday windows, and you always stop by WGN and kind of like, you know, it seemed like such a faraway concept before. And now, like, just looking in at whoever the personality was, and now it's just kind of cool to sit here. So.
Right. It's fun to watch people walk by when I fill in, and they're expecting to see the person that's normally sitting down. They come up to the window so excited, and they kind of lower their head and walk away as soon as they see it's me.
Let down
that
city.
Guy. Yeah, exactly. So let's talk. You've opened for Twista. You've been at Lollapalooza. You've done a lot of great stuff. Tell us about your background, where you're from, and how you got to where you are.
Yeah, I'm a Chicago guy, born and raised on the southwest side, like Ford City, Ashburn area. I'm over in Garfield Ridge now, but I've been hustling the musics for forever. It's hip hop, it's rap music, but it's a little bit more tailored to a bit more of like a blue collared theme, if that makes any sense at all. And it's just been baby steps, you know what I mean? You play a dive bar and it gets into playing a little bigger, and then next thing you know, you open for Twister, and then you're sitting, you know, here. It's kind of the cliche same old story, but yeah, we've reached a point now where we've secured some success, but there's still like a mountain to climb.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been great. It's time to, you know, enjoy the ride, as they say, right? So that's what I'm doing.
Enjoy the ride or enjoy the grind. Because it really is. And, you know, these two industries are very similar, the media industry and music. And I think people don't necessarily, who haven't done it, don't appreciate it. I mean, when you and I chatted, hey, 3:30 in the morning Saturday, no problem. I'm going to come in. And that's the stuff you got to do if you're going to kind of move your way on up.
Especially nowadays. I mean, it's funny, you were playing Chance. I think that was on air on the intro. But like the grind now is an independent grind. Like, you are working your Facebook ad. Like, I'm my PR guy, I'm my graphic designer, I'm my, you know, publicist, and then you got to be the artist, you know. And it's almost funny to like step back and be like, oh wow, like music sometimes takes a back seat, which you have to then correct immediately, be like, okay, it's time to get back into creative mode instantaneously. But yeah, it's grind mode all day long, and I've got no problem doing that. Like, I'll go anywhere and talk to anybody about it.
That's interesting you say that, because yeah, social media can take over your public life in a way that you become so focused on doing this stuff, but at the core of it all. It has to be this creative that you have to still create. You got to feed the beast.
It's so funny. So I picked up some pretty decent management on my new project. It's the gentleman who had Disturbed for most recently, not to, you know, just name drop, but anyway, he's starting to like
drop as many names as you want here.
You know, Disturbed,
it's 3:41 in the morning. Yeah, just drop as many names.
Yeah, if anybody from Disturbed is listening, but yeah, my manager TJ Sagan, he's starting to like do stuff for me now, which as a manager should. And it's kind of weird to like take even just that minor backseat to be like, oh, he just sent me a logo or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh man, that's awesome. Yeah. I love it, but it's just different. It's different.
So have you always been musically inclined? Did you play any instruments, or has it always been your voice since you were young that you knew would carry you through?
I think it's just been a voice thing. We came from not a musical family as far as like musicians are concerned. I mean, music as far as loving music and huge memories of just like Breakfast with the Beatles and my dad every Sunday morning and that kind of stuff and loving it. And but we never played instruments. We weren't musical. I remember writing a rap for some reason, literally in first grade when I was 6 years old, which is ironically about the month of February, which is kind of cool.
Do you still remember it or no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Do you want to rap right now about your February?
I'll give you February.
Yeah, give it to us. If you still remember it, we can do it after the break if you need some time.
I don't need any time.
Let's do it.
I've been doing this for 30 years.
All right, let's hear your rap about February you wrote when you were six.
February, it's a cool month, but it's not like rad or bad. It really is cold. The streets are frozen and you can't see the sun, but that's okay with me because it's a love month and I love that. Girl, Valentine's passing round and round. I said, I love that.
You wrote that when you were six?
6 years old.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so, and I can't believe I just did that on the radio. But yeah, I wrote that when I was six. So it was always just like, why are you doing that? You're six. You know,
right.
They told you to do that. So I was just trying to like find that voice. And then I kind of found it in like 07, 08. We were like rapping at parties and just doing it for fun. And then people were like, you're actually pretty good. You should pursue.
Right.
And I didn't know how, so I did. And I just like bought Pro Tools and I made some horrible songs that I was like so proud of, and in hindsight I mean like really bad, like I had to scrub the internet of them, but I was like, yeah, you know. And then I at that point I reached out to talk about the grind, every artist in Chicago. I just went all over the internet. I said, if you're an artist in Chicago, I sent you an email, and I was just like, if I could buy you a beer or a coffee or just take 30 seconds of your time, can I get up with you? And one guy responded, another local artist who's been in this studio, Kid Russell is his name.
Yes.
So Kid Russell brought me in the studio in probably like 2009, maybe. Him listened to those horrible songs in question, gave me some homework, mm-hmm. and was like, basically beat it. So I did. I went home, figured out this song called City Kids, which was my first like proper release that ever got traction behind it. Brought it back to Kid Russell, and he was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So him and I did a song like right away, and it's kind of been, that's been the ball properly rolling is kind of ever since then.
It's amazing that finding that mentor, just someone that will just give you an ear and help you out, it makes such a difference. And I imagine as your popularity continues and you continue this grind and this growth, I imagine you'll look behind maybe for someone that's reaching out to you and trying to do the same thing.
All day.
Yeah.
Every day. Absolutely. I mean, there's people I'm talking to right now. There's this kid, here's a good plug for radio. There's this guy named Jacob Raymond on the South Side who's doing like singer-songwriter, but he's like young and he's hip and he's dope and he's got tattoos and he's got the voice, but he just needs like a little bit of like mentoring of like more how to maybe present it on the marketing side. And I'm like, dude, you're so much more talented than me. Like, all right, I'll help you out, you know, whatever.
Well, I always tell we have interns that work at the U or here at WGN, and I try and help them out wherever you can, especially if they want to that help. And they always say, you know, thank you. I'm like, hey, you're going to be hiring me one day. That's mm-hmm. what happens when you find these talented people.
It's true.
Just like Jess. Jess is probably going to hire me one day here soon, so I need to suck up to Jess as much as possible here.
Well, hi, Jess. If you guys need a jingle or anything, just let me know.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then you're going to perform for us a little bit. I just have one more question about kind of your growing up experience. So my parents are as hippie liberal as it gets. My older brother was really into rap. No issue with it. But in the age we grew up, rap sometimes got a bad rap, to put it that way, especially for certain families. And was it always encouraged in your household?
No, not at all. I remember we would go to Fort City Mall and go to the little mixtape hut and buy. It was like some hip hop music and it was rap and there was like house music. And I remember one of the mixtape was called Dope SH asterisk T.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought it home and my mom was just like, no way. And, you know, we had the bootleg old stereo system you probably got from some uncle with like the 3 feet tall speakers and the whole deal.
Yes.
So we'd be like bumping Bone Thugs or whomever. And sometimes like in the early, this is way too, again, I wrote the first one, I was six, so this
right.
is like you're 9 or 10. Parents were like, yeah, maybe not. But then when I got older,
yeah,
13, 14, 15, it's all good. So, and now they love it. My parents came to my last show. My 80-year-old grandmother came to my last show.
Really?
Stayed out till 3 in the morning.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Organic granny, we call her OG. She's the best. She has
what'd
a mohawk.
You think?
She loved it. She
has a mohawk?
Yeah, she has a mohawk. She's a professional artist. She's a fabric. Oh, there's a more fancy word. You're on the radio. She's a fabric worker and uh-huh. she's a bead worker. And yeah, OG, or granite granny.
And she took the bus.
She took the bus from the South Side up to the Live Wire Lounge where I had a show just a couple weeks ago, and she stayed up till 3 in the morning. So we've got a very encouraging, artistic family. It's kind
That's
of this
awesome.
Weird mix-up. I know you got to go to break of like blue-collar, roughneckian meets hippie organic granny, and it's turned into this mashup of whatever is sitting in front
of you. That's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool stuff. Cool. All right, more with Southside Jake after this quick break on 720 WGM. John Hansen in for Matt Bubala till 5 this morning. Southside Jake joining me right now.
Yes, sir.
Live in Garfield Ridge right now.
Yes.
And you grew up around Fort City Mall.
Yes.
Did you go to Fort City Mall a lot as a kid?
I used to. I literally grew up in Fort City, like
okay.
at the mall. I grew up on a Fort City drive in the Fort City condominiums. So mm-hmm. we would go. It was all day. And then here's a, uphill both ways in the snow story for you. But mm-hmm. I went to Bogan on 79th and Pulaski High School for a year. But then I transferred to Whitney Young in the West Loop. But we didn't have any money or anything like that. So I had to take public transportation, which is no big deal.
Right.
But I remember it vividly. I would walk from the Fort City condos through the Fort City Mall, catch the 54B to the Orange Line to the Blue Line.
Oh, my gosh.
Blue Line, get off at UIC, and then walk the 2 blocks to Whitney Young. But anyway,
how long would that take?
It took a long time.
Yeah.
That was probably like a good hour and a half or so. And then I played baseball and basketball there. So, like, you know, you do a late night practice or those early morning hoops sometimes to get that gym time. It's like, oh, practice is at 7 a.m.? Like, no, thank you.
This is a side note, but I've been so lucky working at the U to meet so many high school kids and to hear the public transportation journeys that some people do to go to a better school is inspiring. The things that I complain about in my commute, which can be upwards of 15 minutes at 4 in the morning, and I have to go out to the suburbs or something, but these kids that really want to grind it and do it, and it's because of their parents too.
Absolutely.
Making that thing happen. A lot of props to them.
Zero disrespect to Bogan. Bogan was fine. I just wanted to, the same like the music. I'm always just looking for the next best thing, and if I can better myself just a little bit, and we didn't have, all my buds were like Catholic schools, St. Mm-hmm. Rita, St. Lawrence, you know, Catholic. We didn't have the dough for that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I did research. I was like, how can I go to somewhere else? I was like, oh, magnet school. I don't even know what this is. You know, yada, yada, yada. You know, Whitney Young, 54B, Fort City to the Orange Line. Is
there you
what
go.
I remember.
You really can do the traffic report here in a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
What are we about to hear? Southside Girl? Tell us about this.
This is Southside Girl. So growing up on the South Side, living on the South Side, our girls, I love them. It's meant to be a compliment, but they are a combination of kind of this no-nonsense, a little bit rough around the edges, not scared to, like, play some 16-inch softball without gloves and drink, you know, drinky under the table, but also super elegant and beautiful. And the girls that I grew up, you know, crushing on and still do, you know what I mean? It's just like this perfect yin and a yang. And I wanted to capture it. I felt like nobody had a proper song that really paid tribute to them. So I wrote this song called Southside Girl. And
so it's not about one girl, but it's about
It's just the essence. It's the essence. It's funny though, because I thought about several girls, you know, just growing up, not necessarily romantic, just but in my head, and I've told a few of them, like, hey, you know, Southside Girl has got a little bit of inspiration, and they're like, get out of here, you know what I mean? Like,
so you use that line, can sprinkle that line amongst the money, you know, this one's about you a little bit.
I wrote this.
And the girl's like, yeah, you just told what's her face that the other day. So
if you think Southside Girl is about you, it is.
Even me? Okay. All right, Jess, go ahead and hit it. You ready to go, Jake?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it live.
Okay.
Yo.
From 63rd to the burbs, that pretty little mouth kept spitting out four-letter words. She loves loyalty and knows hard work. The wine she'll drink, but the beer is preferred. When I first saw her, though, I was amazed. It was under the lights at a softball game. That freckled nose and that perfect little frame. But what I wouldn't give to know your name, 'cause I love you just as you are. Blue jeans with a pretty smile, a string of pearls, a girl gone wild. Draft beer in the Dixie cup, elegance with a side of tough. She grabbed my White Sox cap and gave a smile as she turned it to the back. Block party, she rocked my world. Here's a toast to my Southside girl. She was raised right, knows how to work. Warm summer nights, taught her how to flirt. She could rock a hoodie or a pencil skirt. Right cross to a jerk if he makes her hurt. You can catch her on a Thursday softball game. Friday night with a drink in her hand. Saturday, Netflix, stay in. Sunday, fun day, rock it again. 'Cause I love you just as you are. Blue jeans with a pretty smile, a string of pearls, a girl gone wild. Draft beer in the Dixie cup, elegance with a side of tough. She grabbed my White Sox cap and gave a smile as she turned it to the back. Block party, she rocked my world. So here's a toast to my Southside girl. I love you just as you are. Why don't we give it a whirl? I think you stole my heart. You are my Southside girl. I think that we could go far. Just us against the world. Please, baby, take my hand and be my Southside girl. I love you just as you are. Blue jeans with a pretty smile, a string of pearls, a girl gone wild. Draft beer in the Dixie cup, elegance with a side of tough. She grabbed my White Sox cap and gave a smile as she turned it to the back. Block party, she rocked my world. Here's a toast to my Southside girl. Blue jeans with a pretty smile, a string of pearls, a girl gone wild. Draft beer in the Dixie cup, elegance with a side of tough. She grabbed my White Sox cap and gave a smile as she turned it to the back. Block party, she rocked my world. So here's a toast to my Southside girl.
All right, that was awesome. Done it live too, right here. You got the, were the headphones signal? Did I ride the levels okay?
It's all good.
I'm clearly not an engineer or anything like that.
We made it through. I apologize for the 3 a.m. voice. I don't pride myself a singer, and admittedly when we did some of those sing-songy parts, you know, it like took forever to warm up just to get to crooning levels. So
any
real singers out there, sorry about that. But yeah, that's Southside Girl. That's the tribute, man. We wanted to pay homage. So, you know, I was raised by them. I dated them, and, you know, they're great, hardworking people that deserve that song.
This is a very broad question, but we had a couple texters from people on the South Side. I'm on the South Side, Southwest Side now, too. I'm from Bridgeport. Proud of you. We have people texting in. The South Side really does. I mean, that really means something to you. This is not just a name.
This is not a gimmick at all. Like, sitting here, I get a little emotional. Yeah. Which is not good for rap, but I'm getting a little welled up just doing that song and hearing that someone's even listening in Bridgeport and texting. Yeah. Like, no, the South Side of Chicago and the whole city. South Side is a state of mind. You know, it's for everybody, but it's underrepresented in my eyes.
Yep.
It's so full of culture. It's so full of just like that song, like grit and warmth and family. I mean, family. He talks about Bridgeport. I mean, that's generations of family. You know, when I go into Shinnick's Pub before a Sox game, like, that's love, and they show us love. You know what I mean? I this is not a gimmick at all. I love the South Side, but I want to take that message and that grit and put it on a bigger level. I don't, you know what I mean? It's not meant to be a niche marketing thing. It's just meant to be, that's where I'm from, and there's so many towns like this in the world, whether you're in, you know, Pittsburgh or New York, or honestly correlated to almost like small town America too, of just that hardworking mentality.
Yeah. It's a fascinating, and when you can't talk South Side, North Side without talking Cubs, Sox, and I'm a Cubs fan through and through, But the many complaints that Sox fans have of Cubs fans, I do as well, too. I always feel more at home at a White Sox game sometimes. I feel like it's you talk about family, hard work, blue-collar sort of thing. It's funny because I think there are a lot of Cubs fans or Northsiders who do relate to that, but don't go down and visit these neighborhoods and yeah. patronize the businesses down there or, you know, show some love for some neighborhoods that could use some love and vice versa. I think that this is a city that is deeply, we're getting pretty deep here, but deeply segregated, not only north side, south side, but on so many different levels. And we could all like communicate a little bit better along these lines.
Well, you hit it on the head because I'll take the counterpoint of like, I was always so ingrained in the south side and always thought the north side was just maybe not as, you know, I don't know, not as
real.
Yeah, exactly. But now as I get older and explore, I'm like, oh, no, my friend. Mm-hmm. The north side is just as gritty and real and has just as many hardworking people as the south side does. You just didn't know about it because you were trapped in your little pocket. But as I travel, like, the whole city of Chicago is that way. And I've got mad love for the north side. It's funny, talking about Cubs and Sox. So I grew up White Sox fan, obviously. South side, gotta be. That song, should grab my White Sox cap.
Right.
My more name dropping. My uncle is the Chicago Cubs pitching coach, Jim Hickey.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, wow.
Who was raised on the South Side. My brother and my new sister-in-law both work in the Chicago Cubs front office. Oh. So now I've got these heartstrings being like, well, the club I grew up with, and I'm claiming this whole South Side Jake thing.
Right.
But you also got to root for who pays the bills. Yeah. And as much as we love the White Sox, they haven't made a mortgage payment yet.
Right.
And we've got Uncle Hick, and we've got my brother and my sister-in-law. So it's like, I hate to say it, let alone on radio, but like I got to give mad homage to the Cubbies and the family, yeah. too. Like, nobody wants that guy, especially the text will come in of like, oh, you got to pick a side. I know how Chicago is.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think I have an asterisk on my little bit of rooting for bothness, because who else can say, you know, three family members?
No, yeah, for sure.
You know?
For sure. I don't root for, I don't, I'm not a Sox hater by any stretch of the imagination. And in 05, I was rooting for them because I wanted to see it. What about 16? Were you rooting for the Cubs before we go to news?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we can all come together. Look at this kumbaya moment we had.
Unify.
Really quickly, where can people find more of your music and where can they discover more about what you do?
SouthsideJake.com is the hub. All of the social media is SouthsideJake. Also, to shamelessly plug a new project, KildareMusic.com is a collaboration between me and a brand new rock guitarist named Matt Schlaka. So SouthsideJake.com, KildareMusic.com, and you can find me all the socials pretty easily.
Jake, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. This is a kind of little baby dream come true, so I appreciate it very much.
We'll try and put you on at an hour where the sun is up at some point.
Hey, I'm going to go grab breakfast somewhere and maybe a Bloody Mary or coffee. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I'm going to bed or if I'm awake. You guys can come. I don't know what's happening. Like, I think there's like the 24-hour diner on Orleans or something like that. I don't know.
Story of our life. And I'll wrap you up and I'll leave you with this 708 texted, and I'm truly inspired by my Southside girl, says the texter, and the song as well. So, Jake, thanks so much.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. We go up to the newsroom to Northside Roger with the news. Take it away. Mm-hmm. 720 WGN, John Hansen filling in for Matt Bubala till 5 o'clock here on this early Saturday morning. Happy to be joined by the wonderful Veronica Appleton, who's a children's author and so much more, does so many great things in our city. Veronica, thanks for joining us here today.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm really excited to talk about this under any context. Children's literature is, of course, so important in our culture. I think everyone probably has a favorite children's book they remember. We wax poetic on this show all the time with people about, oh, remember this book, remember this, remember that.
Yeah.
It's such an important building block to who we are. But as we're in the context of Black History Month, I think it's an important conversation to have that throughout history in the literature world, certainly American history, there are many groups underrepresented in children's literature. And Veronica, you've kind of taken on this mission to make children's literature, certainly, or at least the literature you can control, a little bit more inclusive, right?
Yes.
More absolutely. Diverse. And why do you think that's important?
I would definitely say that when children read the books that they see watching television, they need to see characters that represent who they are. It's very important that you can connect with who you are And then also realize that people care about who you are as a person. Within children's literature, I would definitely say that it's very important that we reflect those characters, reflect the nuances of life, the struggles that people experience, going to school, just the very simplistic foundational things that kids experience on a day-to-day, but actually seeing that in literature. And we've found, even through research, that there's less than 300 to 400 children books produced every year that are either written or illustrated by a person of color. So what that tells you is that in this growing diverse world, there's not a lot of books that can actually service and actually showcase the children of color. And this has been a growing opportunity for authors to connect with these readers and connect with parents. So it's definitely a journey. But it's
you motioned to the book Journey to Appleville when you said Journey there. This is radio, Veronica. You can't just motion over to the book. You got to tell people what you're doing here.
That is true. But I think anything that we experience in life is truly a journey,
yeah,
right? It's the journey of the challenges that we experience, the successes along the road. It's being ourselves and being proud of our individuality. Despite the way that we look.
We'll talk to about Journey to Appleville and your new book coming up in just a few moments, but a little bit about your journey.
Yes.
You're born in Chicago, South Side, right?
Yes, born in Chicago.
This is a real South Side second half of the show, by the way. I just want to say, with Jake and you as well.
That is true, yeah. So I actually grew up on the South Side of the city. I'm actually the only child. My mom, she was one of 14, so it's very...
Wow!
Yes.
She had 13 and siblings, and she's like, you know what? One is good for me.
That is exactly what she said. She said, you know what? Maybe next time. So I've always had this fond wanting of a little brother or a little sister, but I was blessed with some cousins that kind of served in that role, which mm-hmm. is really good. But I think that when you come from those humble beginnings and you realize that, you know what, my parents worked hard for me, my mom being a single parent, it's important to make them happy, to realize that, you know what, as a young Black female, I have an obligation to not only be proud of myself, but to do things that would uplift my community, that would give my family something to be happy about.
You recognize that the luck in your life and want to look behind and help the person that may not have that. So I want to ask about this your day job, because you also, yes. It's not just as a children's author. What else do you do?
That's correct, right. So I lead diversity and inclusion for a advertising firm by the name of We Are Unlimited. It's the national creative agency for McDonald's. And each and every day, right, I'm fighting for the mission of people of color to not only work within our agency, but to also retain that talent. And what does that look like within the advertising industry, where we're seeing many cases of sexual harassment? We're seeing many cases where people are suing companies for discrimination. So how can we, as HR professionals, as diversity professionals, as authors, whatever the case may be, how can you elevate the conversation of diversity so then people can feel accepted when they're in the workplace? Because that's one of the things that really deters people from showing their true individuality. Right? You can't go to work and be yourself, and then after being yourself, you're ostracized for doing that.
Yeah.
That's terrible. So it's not only happening in advertising, it's not only happening in literature, it's literally happening everywhere. And we've seen that, even in Hollywood, right? So there's many cases where diversity plays such a huge role, and we have to make sure that when it comes to gender, when it comes to race, age discrimination, people with disabilities, there's so many different things, and it's just layered. So how can we elevate those voices that have been silenced for so long?
Some listeners might listen and maybe with open hearts still say something like, oh, forcing diversity in certain areas is hippy dippy stuff, you know, it's a left wing agenda sort of thing. And that might be a mindset that does come from a mean place. But I think a lot of people, well-meaning, just say, why do we need to force these sorts of issues? Can't these things just happen naturally? Make the case for why people of color need to be more represented in children's literature, in our commercials, in our advertising.
Absolutely. When we think about the landscape of just Chicago alone, right, we have millions of people that live in this city. And it's growing by the numbers of Hispanic and African-American populations. So when we really think about it, it's necessary that we not only continue showcasing children of color in children books, but also being able to show those faces in the workplace too, right? Because these kids are going to grow up, and if they don't see their faces in books, and they don't see them their faces in history books, then they basically don't know their individuality. So the older that they get, they realize that, well, you know what, I am just who I am. And then they start to see these actions in the workplace that, whoa, like, people are discriminatory against me. Why? They're going to be asking those questions. And then we will do a disservice to them when we are unable to provide that stability at the very beginning during their adolescence and basically say, hey, you know what? This has happened in the past. This is what's happening now. And this is what potentially can happen to you in the future. So just having a very transparent conversation with them is very important at a very early age.
I've got a question for you. I hope this doesn't come off as offensive, but I know this is something that happens when I watch TV. And I think a lot of people have this, but maybe it's people like me that have these thoughts. Sometimes I see, it seems, sometimes I watch an advertisement or I see, sometimes it seems forced. Like, of course they're going to have one of every type of person represented in this commercial. And then it almost comes off as disingenuous. Do you see that way, or is it that the forced nature of it is important to correct a lot of mindset for the past 60, 70 years of television advertisement?
Absolutely. Here's the thing. The Caucasian race has been the majority for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, I have a lot of friends who do not look like me. And that
right.
is important because I was taught at a very early age that, you know what, learn from people that are unlike you. And that's how you can grow. And I've followed that throughout my life, but I haven't suppressed my individuality. And that's what's important. So at the end of the day, yes, it may appear that some ads are very disingenuous and is very forced inclusion, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the brands that aren't doing it right.
Okay, I was just
right?
going to ask
so,
that,
like,
right.
I mean, when there's a natural progression when it comes to advertising, we've seen some bad cases, right? Like the H&M case,
yes.
which is just terrible.
Insane.
Pepsi, just out of touch.
Are you talking about the Pepsi ad at the Super Bowl last year?
I'm talking about the Kendall Jenner Pepsi
yes, yes,
ad.
Yes.
So these are known ads that have portrayed the race and the groups of people just out, completely out of touch with good intentions,
yes.
right? I mean, and that's the crazy thing. So one of the ways that we could kind of avoid that is to really have people of color at the table. Like when they are literally creating these briefs and they are saying, you know what, this is a great idea. The CMO signs off on it. Who else is a person of color at that table? Because that's where you could really create impact.
So it's not only about having the faces at the end of the commercial or the ones that appear.
Exactly.
It's in the decision-making process.
It's in the decision-making process. And that's what we see is that when it comes to diversity and inclusion within any industry, the distribution is very heavily on the entry-level, mid-level, right? You see more people of color in those roles. And then the ones that are actually making the true decisions, they are not in those rooms,
mm-hmm.
people of color. So how are you going to represent the voices that have been silenced for so long? You won't. You won't be able to do that. So that's why you see the work produced the way that it is. Dove, for example,
oh, yeah.
is kind of like the whitewashing thing.
Yeah.
It's like brands that have historically have been, you know, kind of like tent poles in our homes, right? But after a while, you start to realize that, ooh, what are they doing? And you still love the brand. You still, you know, kind of go after it. But there's a lot of people that are saying, you know what? I'm not going to support that brand anymore.
Yeah.
I can't. I can't support a brand that will whitewash my individuality.
By the way, I didn't bring you on here to talk about television advertising.
No.
We've got on such a path. We're going to take a quick commercial break, then
yes.
we're going to talk about what it's like to be a children's author, because I'm so fascinated
awesome.
By this topic, and then we'll talk about Journey to Appleville and plenty more with Veronica Appleton. Stick around,
sounds
okay?
Sounds good.
Good, because if you left, I got nothing else. More coming up on 720 WGN. John Hansen filling in for Matt Bubala here till 5 a.m., joined by Veronica Appleton.
Hi there.
I love that aggressive hello there. You're a children's author now, amongst
yes.
other things. What is that like? When did you decide to do this? Is writing in your blood?
You know what? Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
When I was younger, I started writing children books when I was back at Purdue University in undergrad. And it was 2008. I remember that year. And I turned to my mom. I was talking to her, and I said, "Mom, you know, I think I want to write children books." And it was a very weird inkling. And it was something that I thought could bring a lot of possibilities, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's something new. So I started writing. I submitted my book, and it was literally denied several times, over 70 times.
70 and times.
It was yes, it was. And along that process, you know, I was probably about 19, 20 years old. So yeah. That does something to your self-esteem, right? When someone says that your work isn't good, and in response to that, I would try to change my story to try to fit those publications. And when I would talk to my mom about these things, I really confided her about a lot of things. She said, "Well, you know, Ronnie," that's what she calls me, that's her nickname. And she said, "You know, Ronnie, I think you're changing the story. I don't sense Appleville in this anymore." So when she said that, I got the courage enough to say, "You know what, I'm going to publish this book." And I self-published. And now, 10 years later, right, the book is available at Target. It's available at Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and a couple other stores.
Do you ever walk the aisles and see your book there and just go, "Oh, that's so cool"?
At Barnes & Noble, I have. Yes, at Barnes & Noble. And it's such a wonderful feeling that never to give up. And that's what Journey to Appleville is about. It's about kids. Yes, they're traveling to Appleville. They experience challenges along the way, and that's the key. The challenges that they experience is very symbolic of what we experience in our own personal lives, right? We're on that way to Appleville in some sort of way. Whether you're on your way to being a news anchor, you're on your way to being a doctor, whatever the case may be, you're on your way to something, and that's the key message in here. So to answer your original question, like what it's like being a children's author, it is awesome. And I get to go to all of these schools and inspire kids. And some of those that aren't quite inspired and take some time to kind of get that energy built up and they may be shy, those are the ones that I'm really looking for too, right? Because those are the ones that can really shine and be happy. And normally when you do see kids that have a lot going on in their heads, right? I make sure that I go to schools where they're in an impoverished neighborhood where I can actually really, really inspire them. And that makes me happy too, right? Because, man, like I would have loved for a children's author to come to my school when I was younger. But I think that there's an opportunity to kind of grow some things.
Do you tell your story to these kids too about the going through the difficulty and that the journey of publishing Journey to Appleville is the journey that you went through publishing Journey to Appleville?
Literally. I tell them that story, and I think what they connect with the most is the apples component. I cannot tell you how many babies literally walk up to this book, and they say, "Apple, apple." And I think what it signifies is that kids are really realizing how important it is to kind of think of things at a very early age. And then once they start reading the book, I actually went to a school on the south side. It was a camp at Ada S. McKinley.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, he said, "You know, you don't have to read the book today. I'll read the book." And so he literally read the book, completely adorable. And it was over 20 kids out there, and it was fun. And then they made me their like hero of the day. So those are the things that I really love. And it's exciting too, because I'm on this journey of like publishing this book and then publishing the next book. So it's an exciting time.
When you talk about inclusiveness in children's literature, is it as literal as someone will point and say, "These people look like me, they represent my family"? Or is it much more underlying that it's almost a subconscious thing that people see people that reflect themselves, that gives them a sense of empowerment of who they are? Or is it kind of a mix of both?
I would say it's definitely a mix of both, right? Because you'll meet people that may be colorblind. So when they read a book, they're like, "Oh, okay, well, this person, he actually looks blue," or "This person may actually look gray." So what I wanted to do was use bright colors. My illustrator, Lisa Pangborn, she did an awesome job with the book, awesome job with the website. And what we wanted to do was just create a very vibrant book. I can't tell you, I received two hate emails.
Really?
Actually, about the color of the children and that they weren't dark enough. And then I received another one where they weren't light enough. And I said, but these are the issues that we are actually facing right now. What is the color of black when you really think about it, right? Because we all come in different shades.
Mm-hmm.
Whites come in different shades. Hispanics come in different shades. Asians come in different shades. So when you think about it, people's idea of race is so different. You may be walking down the street and someone right next to you may think that you are not black enough because you are not dark skinned, right? And then you may be walking next to someone who thinks that you are Hispanic, but you're actually Cuban. So these are the interesting nuances where people are trying to categorize you and trying to say that this is the box that you fit in. That's pretty aggressive, I feel mm-hmm. like. Don't categorize me. Don't tell me who I am. So what I wanted to do with this book was highlight some characters that are a little darker, that are a little lighter, because kids come in all different shapes and sizes, and that's the image that we need to portray. That's the color, right? Dark-skinned children, light-skinned children, whatever the case may be, they're kids.
Mm-hmm. New book, new project. What do you got coming?
Yeah, so I have a new book. The character on the front, on the back cover, her name is Tutu. And Tutu Goes to School will be released this spring. So I'm really excited about that. I'm currently finishing up a couple of things. We'll be going to print pretty soon. It's another tale of Tutu being inspired by things in school. She wants to be an archaeologist, so how does she want to get there? I just want to create stories that will change the status quo of what people believe about African Americans, what people believe about Hispanics, so on and so forth, because I think it's important that we perpetuate positive images of our racial groups.
These conversations should happen every single month of the year, but does Black History Month offer an opportunity to frame these sort of conversations a little bit more, I guess, on the nose, like to really start having some of these?
I agree. I mean, it's our month to kind of shine, you know? And back when it was started in 1976, it was literally in our minds that, you know what, Black history is important. We're going to really celebrate the efforts of our ancestors and the roads that they've gone through. It's important. You know, I'm in the first in my family to even think about getting a graduate degree, to even think about going to receive my doctoral degree. So that's important.
Yeah.
Like when you really think about it. And I know that there's a lot of other families that have first, right? First generation coming to America, like first generation of doing a lot of things. Like 2 weeks from now, I'll be going to Dubai, and like my aunts, they literally called me and they're like, I don't think you should go. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, it's just too far away. And I said, well, you know what? I need to see the world. You know, that's a part of growing up. And these are the things that you guys fought for. So why not just let me have a little fun?
They did the hard work.
Not
that you haven't too, but
exactly.
The generations before us, I see it a lot in the LGBT movement too as well. So many people have progressed so far.
Exactly.
And we're the ones that get to carry it on and hopefully continue that legacy for the next generation. And you're certainly doing that with your children's literature. Where can people find Journey to Appleville? Remind people again.
Absolutely. So Journey to Appleville can be found online at Walmart, Target, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and a couple of other bookstores like in the airports and everything like that. So definitely go online and find me. My name is Veronica Appleton. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and then also my website at www.appleviblebooks.com.
I'm glad it's in the airport. I'm going to buy about 12 of them for the kids that always sit in the row behind me. Read this book, right, kid. Stop crying. No, I'm just kidding. Veronica, really great to see you, and
thank
I'll see you a little
you
bit
so
later
much.
In the work on the U.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. That was a wonderful interview and really great insight into children's literature. Just a fascinating discussion. It is 4:31 right now, which means it's time to go up to the newsroom, and we go up to Roger. Have you read a book since you were a kid? I mean, I think you're still pretty stuck on children's literature. Last time I checked.
A is for apple. B is for bat.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I don't read as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Do you have a, do you remember any, do you have any favorite kids books? Like, I was a big Shel Silverstein guy. All the poems and stuff like that were big for me. The one, the caterpillar one was always big. Give a mouse a cookie. I remember, I don't know if you have one that sticks out to you,
well,
Roger.
Well, raising the kids, we had a lot of those books in the house. But when I was a kid, I kind of gravitated towards actual biographies.
Really?
Seriously.
You were into it early on.
I was into history stuff, historical stuff, and famous people and sports figures and stuff like that. That's what I liked reading as a kid. Then as I got the one book that really stood out was Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading that as a child, and now they've had several movie versions, and there's a new one out that I want to see.
You're an old soul.
Old soul, but again, A Wrinkle in Time was the book in the right place at the right time when I read it. As an adult now, it takes on a whole different context. I'm not that kid again exploring it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, you get the Dr. Seuss books, which mm-hmm. we had a ton of them for the kids and the grandkids. And for kids, it's an exploration. But as an adult, after about five times of reading the same book, your mind starts to turn to slush.
Right.
You know, so it's all in context.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Kids. I have a classmate, old high school classmate. I'm trying to remember the book series. I think it was, called Anna Banani or something like that. She has written a series of children's books too,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's great. I think to be able to write. Ideas that can communicate with young people and not just communicate with them, but make them want to read more and again.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I find it fascinating as we're going a little longer in the discussion,
that's
though.
Right.
It seems like, oh, I'd write a children's book that the vocab must be easy. It seems like it's easier, but Veronica, it's got to be such a tough needle to thread.
It is a tough needle to thread. I actually had a professor at Purdue who I consulted with when I was writing this book, and she said, never write a book to teach a child anything, right? You write a book to entertain them, to have that valuable lesson at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
But along that journey, when they're reading, just entertain them, make them have fun. And so some of the words, you have to use them eloquently.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you have sentences, you have to kind of play with the words a little bit. But there's different stories and different contexts within those stories. So similar to your feedback about autobiographies at a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
There's some books that are a bit more complex for children too, right?
Yeah.
So it's more of like the autobiographies of historical figures and things like that. But you do see some books that are a bit more simplistic too.
Yeah. Mix of them.
Of course, if you're, like your professor said, if you just, you know, write to entertain, mm-hmm. for many children, they're reading about something they don't know about.
Exactly.
And to try to teach them something at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it could become a little confusing or put offish for them
mm-hmm.
at their level of their mind at the time.
Yeah.
So I understand that point. It's an excellent point.
Yeah, Roger, I know that Churchill book was written to entertain that you read as a four-year-old, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on page 476 right now.
All
I'm
right.
Through it.
You're getting through it one at a time. Thanks again, Veronica and Roger. 435 news time. Go ahead. Thanks. Little Hillary Duff. Oh, you are rocking in there, Jess. Are you a big Hillary Duff fan?
Of course.
Yeah. I didn't expect to hear Hillary Duff on GN. Does Matt pick your music for you? This is John Hansen filling in for Matt Bubala, by the way. Does he pick your bump-ins, or do you get to pick whatever you want, Jess?
He lets me be creative, so.
Does he let you put in Hillary Duff?
Not usually.
Well, you know, what's the phrase? When something's
the cat's away, the mice will play.
Super Bowl is coming up. Roger, are you excited for the Super Bowl?
What's the Super Bowl?
Right. Are you, I know, me either. I don't know whether it's just the teams this year or just, you know, honestly, I think that when the NFL is not my go-to sport, mm-hmm. when the Bears are good, I'll watch Bears games.
Exactly.
I'm into it a little bit more. If the Bears are good, I'll maybe watch that Sunday night game of Packers-Lions mm-hmm. because it has a impact on the standings. But when the Bears aren't good, I just don't watch really any NFL football.
Yeah.
I did watch the AFC-NFC championship games lightly, but that was because I was in Las Vegas and you can't escape the television.
Sports all over the place there.
Yeah. So I did catch what was going on. So I personally am not too hyped for the Super Bowl, but
I could care less.
I'm still going to put money on it, of course, Roger.
Oh, really?
But I got to play a little bit of money here and there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So 312-91-7200, let me know who's going to win so I know where to put my money is what I'm saying.
Well, I hear that the Eagles are you know, they're going to be putting out a new Greatest Hits album. So... sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go with the Eagles too over the Patriots.
Oh, really?
All right. Why not? That's what I. That's
calling for an upset.
Yeah, I'm going to call for an upset. The line has moved a couple times, and I think that Philly's defense. That's what I hear is going to hold up and do real well. So, speaking of Super Bowl celebrations, I know everyone has their own thing that they're going to be doing. Some of you will be celebrating with nachos around the house. Some of you will just have people over. Some of you will be going to a bar. We're going to check in with Wally. Wally is a big fan of WGN, calls in and interacts with Matt Bubala, but he's still going to join us, even though it's me filling in for Matt. And Wally, tell everyone where you are right now.
I am in Schaffhausen, Switzerland, which is pretty much the farthest north city within Switzerland. It kind of sticks up, if you look at a map of Switzerland, there's a little piece of Switzerland that sticks up into Germany, and Germany is to the north of us, to the east of us, and to the west of us. And I'm here today. There's a carnival parade that they have, which is every year right before Lent, actually. And it's just a huge celebration. They've got at least 35 bands and floats and things in this parade, and it's just it's a huge celebration for the city here.
What's the name of the city again?
Schaffhausen.
Schaffhausen.
If your listeners are familiar with the IWC watch company, every one of their watches says Schaffhausen on the face of the watch. So it's about an hour north of Zurich, 45 minutes north of Zurich.
What's the weather like in Switzerland like right now in Schaffhausen, Wally?
Right now it's about zero for us. Zero Celsius, so about 32. And
okay.
It's, light snow right now.
So warmer in Switzerland than it is here in Chicago. We got a little cold front.
Much warmer than Chicago. Yeah, much warmer than Chicago. Yes.
Wally, are you going to be there on Sunday for the Super Bowl?
I will.
Are you gonna make any? I was in Italy once studying abroad during the Super Bowl, and there was a bar that opened up for all of the University of Illinois students that were in Verona, Italy, because it was at like 3 a.m. Are you going to find a way to watch that game, or do you not care enough?
I don't care enough, quite honestly. But I will look. I think my pickings might be very slim. I'm 7 hours ahead of Chicago.
Okay.
So it's going to be, 12:30 a.m. is going to start here for us. So I doubt, and I have a flight to Italy on Monday morning, so I doubt that I'm going to be staying up late Sunday night to watch the game.
Well, Wally, I got to ask, because you're in a parade right now, you're seeing all these bands. I got to read you the story of what Philadelphia is going to be doing, and I wonder if they're doing any of this in Switzerland if the party gets too rowdy. So Crisco is being downgraded to second string. This is from CBS Sports. Gear Oil is in at starter. Gear Oil out of Philadelphia, this is what they're doing. They're trying to minimize the damage that the fans can do to the city after the Super Bowl. So as part of preventative measures, the Philly Police Department is using Gear Oil to grease up all the poles through the downtown streets. So city workers attempted to thwart rowdy fans by applying Crisco to those poles during the NFC Championship game, but it didn't go as planned. Several Eagles fans managed to overcome the Crisco and climb their way up the poles through sheer determination. Will we see any of that action in Schaffhausen?
That's very funny. I have not seen any greasing of the light poles here. I think it's pretty much a laid back crowd. Although today is a little bit rowdy for Switzerland. it's quite the party atmosphere.
So if you're surrounded by Germany, is everyone in Lederhosen, or how does that, or is it, because I know Switzerland does have some Lederhosen in them.
Yeah, a little bit. So the funny thing is, these bands dress up. I'll send Jessica a couple pictures, but everybody in these bands dresses up, and it's just crazy, crazy outfits. And they're phenomenal bands. I mean, they're basically marching bands. And there are people in these bands from probably 12 years old to probably 82 years old. It's incredible. They're like community bands. But it's just a huge, it's a huge event. And, there's bands from all over Switzerland that come in for this. Like I said, there's at least 35 that I heard of bands and floats from various areas.
Is there any
coming in for this?
Is there any beer being imbibed by any chance?
I would have to say yes. Yes, quite a bit actually. Yeah, the bars are doing a great business today, and especially because there's a couple hours between the this kind of kickoff and then the actual parade. And the interesting thing is, some of these bands actually travel with their own, boy, they call them a float, but it's actually an enclosed bar. It's almost like a semi truck that it has a bar inside of it, and they travel with these things. So you can see, I think, what the incentive is for these people to be in these bands.
Yeah, no, certainly. And again, this is ahead of Lent, so they're getting all their debauchery out of the way.
Exactly. Yes. And even it's funny, I said, you know, a lot of the people, I mean, everybody in the bands is all dressed up with face paint. But even a lot of the people who will be watching are all dressed up. And I'm looking here at a family of Smurfs that are walking in front of me right now. From a, it looks like maybe a 1 year old to the grandfather, looks like he's probably about 70 or 80 here.
Do any of that?
Everybody's dressed up. It's quite an event.
So if you're surrounded by Germany, because I know I visited Switzerland once, and it's everyone speaks either French, German, Italian. It's a mix of things. Any chance you can get someone to say hello to us in any three of those languages really quick, live on the radio, or do you not feel comfortable doing that?
Oh, yeah. No. Absolutely.
Let's hear from a Swiss person.
Let me get somebody.
Wally, our Swiss correspondent, is going to get someone to say hello live on a radio station in Chicago.
So it's funny. It's funny because the northern part of Switzerland speaks German. It's a Swiss German. The southern part, the northern part of Switzerland speaks German. The southern part speaks Italian, and the western part speaks speaks French.
Right.
Because that's what they're close to. So that's their influence. Let me just see if I can find somebody. The funny thing is, many of these people don't speak English.
Yes. Wally, do you speak any of those three languages?
Sprechen Sie Deutsch a little bit, not enough to count. Not enough to count here, and everybody speaks quickly. And the funny thing is, it's a different dialect here for the Swiss German. And their joke is, the Germans understand us, but we don't understand. Yeah, we understand the Germans, but the Germans don't understand us.
All right, well, I don't want to put you on the spot here. I don't know if anyone wants to talk. That's going to be probably a little awkward.
And I don't know any of the people right here. And the thing is,
I just wanted to talk to a random Swiss person at 4. Yeah.
I mean, it's Guten Tag.
Guten Tag.
It's German. A good day is, yeah, Guten Tag.
We'll just say Guten Tag from Chicago.
Thank you. And the greeting is just Grüezi. That's just greetings. It's just it's their hello.
Okay.
Grüezi and Guten Tag from Schaffhausen, Switzerland.
All right. Well, Wally, we really appreciate it. Yeah, we appreciate you calling in and joining the show, even though Matt's gone. I'll tell Matt you said hello. Okay, Wally?
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right.
Stay warm.
Oh, sorry, I just cut him off. He said, stay warm, of course. Jess, I was hoping we were going to get, that would have been a random nice connection there, but that's okay.
Maybe next time when Wally calls in.
So does he travel everywhere around? What's the deal?
He travels everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And he always calls in no matter what.
Yes.
He tries to. Oh, that's very sweet of him. Okay, we got to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to wrap things up on 720 WGN.
Ingers be home, diddy who, gonna say do. Yee, bears, beer, horn, bear, scare, bork, bork, bork.
Roger Mattis, what is that? What are we listening to?
That's the Swedish Chef.
Oh, I was wondering. That was my guess. That was going to be my guess.
That was his random interview. You know.
That was Wally's interview, yes.
Yeah,
with the Swedish Chef? You do understand that Sweden and Switzerland aren't the same thing,
that's
there, Roger.
Close enough. That's the best I could come up with at this time.
Seriously.
Just keep listening to this for a second.
Yeah. He's making meatballs. He just hit one with a tennis racket.
A little 720 WGN.
Two old guys are hitting it back. Okay, that's enough.
Oh, Roger, the things that come out of your brain onto the airwaves of WGN.
Nobody should know, and they've got laws against it.
720 WGN, John Hanson filling in for Matt Bubala here till the end of the show. And, yeah, we love chatting about all sorts of things and talking about the Super Bowl and all sorts of things coming up a little bit later on in the show, of course. Roger, so, again, I'm going to place a bet on here. What do you think? Okay. We think an Eagles here? Give me a
26. Well, what's the line?
I think it's like 4.5 right now.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah, that's all.
Ooh, that's touchy.
Talk me through what I should do here.
Well, if you're going with the Eagles' defense, which was pretty tight in the last game, I mean, they tore apart Minnesota like crazy and held them to like nothing. I might take the 4. Who's being favored?
New England's up.
Yeah,
4.5 points.
I'd take the 4.5. I think it's going to be a close game. All might right. be a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go with the Eagles. But then again, Tom Brady and New England.
Yeah, I know. It's so tough.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Now, here's my thing. Here's a random question for you, Roger. Mm. Could you climb up a pole covered in grease?
You know, I saw that story last week, and I was going to report it. But then I saw that story like a few hours later that this guy climbed the pole
with
the grease on it. So, I saw that last week.
So it looks like that they did Crisco at first.
Yes.
And then someone, how can you climb up a pole covered in Crisco? That's incredible.
It is impossible. Seriously, it's the light pole.
I can't even climb up a light pole normally. I'm going rock climbing later today. Right. You could give me little posts to climb up a light pole, and right. I would never be able to do it. Let alone covered in Crisco. Yeah,
no, I have no clue how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you scrape it off, wipe it off, it's still slick.
Right. Well, here's the reason the gear oil apparently is thicker. It's a molasses-like substance, and it really smells. But if the Eagles win or lose the Super Bowl and you're had a few drinks in, you don't care if it smells funky.
Right.
But apparently it's tough to remove from clothing and jerseys as well.
But if you're drunk enough.
Who cares?
That's, to climb yes. a light pole. Exactly. Who cares? They yeah. were trying to save the light poles from being two reasons.
Yeah.
The city equipment from being damaged and people falling off the light poles.
Right.
You know, not sliding off.
Well, yeah,
off.
They're trying to save them from themselves. And exactly. also, you know, I think, honestly, truth be told, if people fall off a light bulb and they hurt, a light pole and they hurt themselves, yeah. that's their own issue. But I think that they're really worried about someone falling on some innocent bystander below.
Well, yeah, it's ridiculous.
You know, I'm going to go with Philly just because they're responsible about their light poles and they're going at it the right way.
So, yeah, and are you buying stock in Crisco?
No, because they can't use the Crisco doesn't work.
Oh, that's right. What's this other? The other
gear
grease?
Oil.
Gear oil. Find who makes gear oil. Buy stock.
Absolutely. Okay, Roger, we're going to take a quick commercial break, then we're going to wrap things up here on 720 WGN. All right, John Hanson here, filling in for Matt Bubala for just another couple minutes, but the show is going to, the Saturday morning is going to roll on with the morning show with Orion Samuelson. And Orion, I hear you're joining me on the line here. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. I'm, as Matt would always say, we're going to WGN West because I'm on the air from Scottsdale, Arizona this morning. A town that's going crazy if you're a golfer because it's the Phoenix Open this weekend. Oh. And they're anticipating in 4 days. They started on Wednesday with a Pro-Am and then Thursday the Phoenix Open got underway and goes through tomorrow. They are predicting 850,000 people will show up at the golf course in Scottsdale where they hold this every year. And so if you want to go out to a restaurant in Phoenix or Scottsdale this weekend, yeah, you better have your reservations made.
Get a crock pot going and make some dinner at home if you can. I got to ask, is that the tournament where it's kind of like a circus-like atmosphere at some of the holes where they get a lot of younger fans, they're cheering, they're going crazy?
I think, and they consume a lot of alcohol. We've already had one streaker across the golf course, and he managed to run quite a distance before they caught him. And the attendance of this event is just unbelievable. But yeah, you're not quiet here when they're on the tee ready to go. And if you make you're a golfer and you make a bad shot, they boo like crazy.
Yeah, I think
if you make a good shot, they cheer like crazy between sips of beer. So
yeah, 16th hole
they
yesterday.
Have a good time. Yeah. But I did want to talk about your climbing a grease pole.
Oh, go
because,
ahead. Yeah.
In Ontario, Wisconsin, where I grew up near La Crosse, 4th of July celebration, they always had a grease pole. And there was always competition to see who could climb it and that sort of thing. And it was a lot of fun.
Did you ever try?
No, I never did. No. I'm not that brave. But I had a lot of friends who did. And it was one of the highlights of the 4th of July celebration in Ontario, Wisconsin.
That's amazing. And I can't let this pass. A streaker on a golf course. The things that you never think you'd see in your life.
Yeah, I think he was impacted a little bit by alcohol, but he did make it.
Did he fall into the bunker? Is that how he eventually got caught, or how'd that?
No, the security people finally got to him, but not before he had probably had a golf drive without clothes on of about 300 yards.
As long as you didn't have a dog leg to the right. All right, what do you got coming up on the show here today, Orion?